In association with NintendoWorldReport.com, Child's Play Charity.org, and listeners just like you, this is part two of NWR's second annual live telethon. This time, Neil, Scott, Don, and Zach discuss their games of the year, TYP and Greg host Radio Trivia Live, and in the last segment, Johnny and Greg wax poetic on the GameCube with Penny Arcade's Jeff Callis, The Totally Rad Show's Jeff Cannata, Planet GameCube's founder Billy Berghammer, and our old friend Rick Powers. Just like last time, it should be noted that we didn't record this in the usual way, and as such, there might be a few technical snags to be found. Even so, it's a great show, and I'm sure you'll enjoy listening to it just as much as we enjoyed recording it. That being said, here's the show, folks.
So our connectivity editor, Scott Thompson, is going to lead all this junk with the game of the year. So take it away, Scott.
Thank you, Neil. So, as was kind of pointed out in the segment just before this, we're not going to necessarily come up with a winner for game of the year here. But just kind of toss out a game.
Skyward Sword in Mario Land. Like, let's get real.
Yeah.
Maybe Mario will sneak in. But
no,
like, come on.
You know what? I'm actually going to dismiss that and say that Xenoblade is going to be my game of the year.
Okay, yeah.
That's Mario.
I focus on games that come in North America.
I got it. You don't.
So in Europe, Xenoblade could unseat Skyward Sword. In North America, it's like Skyward Sword, then Skylanders, then like Madden 12 for me. Or you don't know Jack. That's also very good. I played that recently.
Honestly, I don't think I've bought a Wii game this year yet. I bought Skyward Sword. I think that's the first Wii game I bought this year.
There was a good chunk of the year where I think the only thing I played on my Wii from like June to September, I played Madden for a little while, and that was it.
Well, but before we go too far here, let's introduce who's talking right now. I'm Scott Thompson. You might recognize me from Connectivity. I'm here with Neil Ronahan.
Hi.
Zachary Miller.
Woo!
JP Corbin.
Hi, everybody.
And Dan Koopman.
Hello, folks.
And we've also got James Dawson here. He's sort of our assistant for this episode. I think he's already posted it in the chat, but we are going to accept calls during this segment, and you can, I guess, share your personal game of the year so far, and I guess why you liked it so much. So his Skype name is, I think it's Tails X Gundam. It should be posted in the chat. So
yeah,
just like the segment before, you can add him on Skype, send him a chat, you know, saying what your choice is and why, and then he'll might, if you're lucky enough, pick you, and we'll put you in the call. And, we'll hear from you. So we'll probably take those every 10 minutes or so. So, let's start off with, I think, the DS and the 3DS, which we've lumped together here.
Yeah, there were a lot more games for those.
There were.
Yeah. And also those two combined. Because let's say that the 3DS didn't have a glorious start as the DS.
I would disagree. Well, I mean, are we comparing the 3DS as the DS launch or just this year DS versus 3DS?
Yeah, this year.
Anything looks good compared to the DS launch.
Yeah, I was going to say, I like Super Mario 64 and all, but...
As a European, we got more because we got the DS also later, so...
Oh, yeah, because then you guys got it in 2005, right? Instead of... We got it late 2004.
Yeah, that's correct. Mm-hmm.
But we're talking about 2011, so.
Yes, exactly. 2011.
So, as we mentioned, we're not going to spend too much time on, I guess, probably the two biggest games right now, being Super Mario 3D Land and then later Skyward Sword. We just had an hour-long segment about Skyward Sword. We probably don't really need to delve too much into
that. And
there
was a half an hour of the new business with Super Mario 3D Land, and they covered it pretty succinctly. So.
Exactly. So I think we'll probably move on from those. Of course, those are considerations. But let's get to some forgotten games, especially from earlier in the year.
Yeah.
Real early in the year, Neil, you actually threw this one out, Ghost Trick, for the DS.
Yeah, I actually didn't play it until... Probably, well, during the dead summer of just no games for Nintendo systems. But Ghost Trick was incredible. Like, I like it more than some of the Ace Attorney games, in all honesty. And I love the graphical stylings. I really enjoyed that game. And Radiant Historia was another third-party early 2011 DS game that was Aces as well, and that one's from Atlas, and it's just, it's a great RPG.
Would you say it was tits?
Yeah. I guess it might be tits. Yeah.
So I guess for anyone who hasn't played it, I mean, maybe talk a little bit about what you even do in Ghost Trick, because I completely missed this, but then I kind of hear on RFN, I would hear a lot about this game and how great it was.
So basically, it's, I guess, a point-and-click adventure where you are in control of a ghost and you perform tricks. I mean, that's pretty much the long and short of it, is that you play as this character. The name's escaping me because it has been several months since I played the game. Sissel. Sissel is his name. And you die, and then you basically go throughout the entire game to unravel the mystery of what the hell happened to you. And along the way, it's usually the chapter will start off with someone dying, and then you will go back in time a couple minutes and then, you know, move around to objects and perform tricks that, like, get them to do different things to prevent that person's death. And the story is really good, and the puzzles are usually pretty fun, although there is a lot of trial and error involved, which is probably the one bad thing about the game. But even still, it's a great story from start to finish. And I mean, there is a distinct moment where it goes from, like, you know, this is kind of a cool story and a cool mechanic, and then you get really into the story. And then they introduce some kind of cool stuff near the end of the game that changes up the gameplay a lot.
I think the characters are also so well written in this game.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, you can see the
Ace Attorney. Even the dog, like Missile.
Yes.
Missile is adorable.
Yes. I mean, there's a lot of great characters in this game, and it's a very, very good game.
Awesome.
I've meant to pick it up if I ever see it on a shelf for relatively cheap.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, yeah. So I guess another DS game, or two games really, worth talking about would be Pokemon Black and White.
Yeah, Zach and I we did the review earlier in the year, and I recall we both loved the crap out of that game. It's a new Pokemon game, and it's kind of cool because it takes place in a New York-like world as opposed to the other games, which are all kind of in, like, this Japan-esque world. And as someone who lives near New York, I found a lot of what I thought to be, like, settled digs at, you know, the New York area, like how apparently New Jersey is just a bunch of cowboys, if you look at the map. There's apparently some kind of really, really messed up 9/11 reference to one of the powerful Pokemon. Like, his height is, well, I think he emerges from a crater or something, and his height's like 9'11" or something. That might be a little hearsay.
Oh.
But
oh, weird.
I didn't
and there's
that.
Also, like, there's like a Brooklyn area with hipsters that I thought was kind of funny. And then, of course,
I didn't get that far into the game, but now I want to go back and play it.
there are all new Pokemon in this game for, I think, the first time in the series outside of the original, and that's really cool as well, because it brings back that kind of, I guess, almost exploration aspect of Pokemon, as opposed to, like, oh, look, I'm getting, you know, Pikachu again. Hold you on. Get all new ones. Although
Wait
they all
a second.
Kind of fit the archetypes.
Hold on. There are new Pokemon in every Pokemon game.
Well, I meant
the point here is that you don't get your old Pokemon until the second half of the game.
There are only new Pokemon in this game.
I didn't like Pokemon Black and White so much.
I didn't like it as much as Heart Gold and Soul Silver. Those were where it's at for me. But these are still good
crap.
Games.
You just went up to $2,455.
Somebody donated like $500.
Whoever you are, thank you. Yes.
It was not me.
We're that much closer to me being humiliated in Jeopardy.
Yeah, we have unlocked the Famicast episode, or the Famicast segment, and Memoirs of a GameCube may have been locked up before then. I don't even know, but
no, we were just below the 2,000 for Memoirs.
That's,
so
that's awesome. Whoever did people. That, thank you, and thank keep, you. Keep the so donations look. Coming.
Keep it
Child's
coming.
Coming.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's amazing. Yeah, way to go, guys. And now we're 350 from the Jeopardy segment. So
oh, you want that? Nice. Come on. All you people in the forums don't like me. You want to see me humiliated by Aaron Kaluska in Jeopardy?
Yeah.
Keep donating.
Yeah, and I think the over-under on how bad Aaron Kalutzka beats everyone in Jeopardy is quite substantial.
Well, I wish we had Pedro
he's
on.
He's the next Pedro Hernandez,
I was
going to
say. I would love those two to duke it out a little bit.
Yeah.
But Pokemon
like
Black...
a Masters Cup or something eventually.
There you go.
Anyway,
Pokemon,
game of the year.
Pokemon is good. If you like Pokemon, there's a lot of steps in the right direction for Pokemon Black and White.
I found it too easy.
Oh, just beat the Elite Four and then tell me how easy it is.
I've beaten the Elite Four.
Shit.
Do you grind a lot? Because that's where I feel like if you sit back and grind with every Pokemon, of course it's going to be easy. But I generally, since like the first one, when I kind of, I guess, mastered the mechanics of it, I usually kind of like sprint through the game and don't really focus on leveling guys up. And that's what keeps the challenge kind of good. Or you can even do I forget the name of it. The Nuzleaf run or whatever, where like you only can catch one new Pokemon in a new area, and if you kill that Pokemon, you can't catch another Pokemon.
Yeah,
I still want to try that in a game.
I mean, I suppose the Elite Four was a little harder, but the most part of the game was a bit boring.
I think after the Elite Four, the challenge just shoots through the roof because random Pokemon are like level 67.
I think I was just in love with Heart Gold and Soul Silver.
It's a Nuzlocke run. By the way, Shaman just said that what I was referring to is a Nuzlocke run, where you catch the first Pokemon that you find in an area, and if you don't catch it, then you can't catch a Pokemon in that area.
Okay.
I will never do that.
What I'm trying to say is that I loved Heart Gold and Soul Silver so much from going to this one, it felt like a step backwards.
Yeah, in some ways it does, yeah. Especially the menu system.
I agree with the menu system.
Everyone in the chat's kind of saying that I think we play it wrong, that we shouldn't be focused on the game part of the game, that the game really is just like making that super team and then competing.
Yeah, since the original, I've never done that in Pokemon. I usually I beat the Elite Four and just kind of bomb around for a little bit afterwards and move on. That's how I do.
I
spent 50 plus hours on every Pokemon game though, so I have no complaints.
Yeah, I will say the online iteration, like I guess online functionality of this one is really well done, and I think they change up the formula enough that it's kind of fresh. And I like the whole moral debate of, you know, if capturing Pokemon is okay. You know, I think they do some interesting things, but I would like to see a little shake up.
The story and then the whole campaign, I think, was a big step up from what the series had done previously.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I see the team in this one as PETA.
Yeah, I mean, really, yeah, kind of.
It's Nintendo's, I guess, they didn't know it at the time, but they were like, hey, these guys are going to be real jerks about Mario Land in a year or two. We need to make sure we get them good.
Yeah.
Really, I mean, it's not that hard to predict that PETA is going to be jerks to somebody.
Yeah.
Someone made a comment in the chat that Nintendo's even hosting Wi-Fi tournaments with Black and White, which is, nice. That, I think, that's pretty cool.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
There you go. So, and then I guess looking at it, I think the last regular just DS game we have on the list is Kirby Mass Attack.
Yeah. Although I will take this time. We don't need to talk about it any further. But Radiant Historia is a very, very good RPG. If you like classic RPGs, play Radiant Historia. It's really good. Now we can talk about Kirby Mass Attack. I'm off.
Well, if you follow Connectivity at all, we've talked about this game quite a bit. We even did a segment on it.
Yeah, we had a whole segment on it.
It's awesome. I really enjoy it. The comparisons come up both on Connectivity and I think in comments on the game review. But yeah, in a lot of ways, it's sort of like Pikmin Light, you know, and you're controlling these 10 little Kirbys and having them pounce on enemies and maul them and then pick up fruit and, you know, continue on their merry
way.
The
controls still don't really jive with me too well. Like, I feel like this, I know Johnny talked about this on RFN when he was playing the game, that like, I wish there was more control over the Kirbys in the game.
Yeah.
And it's still really fun and I really like it, but the controls kind of soured me on it a little bit. And also, I will make my other random shout out to a game because, as Aaron reminded us in the chat, Professor Layton and the Last Spectre came out, which is, it's more Layton. So that's very good if you're into that sort of thing, which I am.
No,
so
London.
I bought it. I haven't started it yet.
Oh, that's right, Dan. Yeah, you don't have the London life in your version of it.
Yet you're closer to London than all of us. That's bad.
We're getting it next week together with what is like Kirby. So we're getting two awesome Nintendo games at the same time, like every single week till the 2nd of December.
That's so weird.
Yeah. Well planned.
But, you know, I think Kirby's a lot of fun and, you know, it's adorable in the way that Kirby normally is. But I agree, the control is a little floaty at times. It's easy to get Kirby's trapped and, you know, accidentally get them killed.
Yeah. It's still super cool, though. I highly recommend it if you're into touchscreen DS games in that regard.
And we brought this up before, but if you're debating between which Kirby game to get, I'd say if you're a single player exclusively kind of guy, I'd say Mass Attack is the way to go.
Yeah, I agree.
Versus Return to Dreamland, which I think
that's
is better.
That's more multiplayer.
Exactly. Better with more people.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's see here. So I think that's most everything on DS. Now we got 3DS here, and there was quite a bit of, I guess, kind of rehash, and then couple new exciting things.
Wait, Neil, what about Edge of Time 3DS?
Well, that's we're talking about 3DS right now.
Right. Why would we talk about
terrible games? We can also bring that in with, I guess, like the no prize of the year with Transformers 3DS, Super Monkey Ball 3D, Cubic Ninja.
I just bought Super Monkey Ball 3D like a week ago.
I think we can also add. You can also add a new game to this list this week because I just finished Need for Speed to Run on 3DS,
and that's pretty terrible too. Yeah, Asphalt. Yeah. I think also be another one. I know. I think Josh Max reviewed that for us and. I think it was pretty awful. I remember playing the demo for it earlier this year, and it was terrible. But let's talk about good games.
Well, you know what? Actually, yeah. I thought before we move on to 3DS, I don't know, James, do we have any callers yet who are interested to share their game of the year? I don't – he hasn't told us. So if anyone listening wants to talk about their game of the year.
Yeah, if you want to talk DS, 3DS, I guess, right now. I mean, let James know, and we can bring you on.
Exactly, yeah. So, okay, well, yeah, I guess let's start with sort of the remakes then. I think we can kind of lump Ocarina of Time and Star Fox 64 3D together and maybe talk about those a little bit.
I think they're both fantastic.
They are both fantastic.
Of the two, I think Star Fox is the better remake.
I think, yeah, it's definitely the better remake, especially, I mean, if you even take it, I guess, down to the development aspect, Star Fox 64 3D is, I guess, a complete graphical upgrade. It's like Q Games just remade everything for it.
Yeah.
It's still the same game, but they remade everything, whereas Ocarina of Time 3D took the original game and just made it nicer looking.
Right.
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 What?
But both games are probably easily in the top 10 on N64, if not like the top 5.
They're in the top 3 for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it varies from person to person. Ocarina, I would assume, would be near everyone's top list, and Star Fox wouldn't be too far behind.
Them and Mario 64 are my top 3 on the N64. So, I mean, I love the games.
No love for Blast Corps?
I never played Blast Corps.
I'm about to play Blast Corps for the first time ever for a feature later on the site where I go over all the rare Nintendo 64 games. Tease. But yeah, Star Fox 64 3D, I really enjoyed that. As someone who didn't really own Star Fox 64 until probably like halfway through the GameCube, I found it cheaper then. And I really loved playing that game kind of like as if it was new again. Because when I played it, it was, you know, 6 years old when I actually played through it a lot. And Ocarina of Time 3D was just a great trip down memory lane.
Yeah.
I was surprised at how much I'd forgotten how to do in Ocarina.
Yeah, I mean, I remember Deku Tree and, like, Dodongo's Cavern, like, the back of my hand. But as I got to the second half of the game, I realized, you know, I have played this, like, 2 or 3 times before, but I don't really remember it as specifically.
Yeah,
like Princess Rudo saying, no, go away. I'm like, oh, okay.
And I was like, I hadn't...
What did I do wrong?
I hadn't played the Water Temple since my original N64 playthrough because... For some reason, I never went back and played that in the various GameCube and Wii Virtual Console releases of the game.
Because it's the worst temple in the game?
And it's a lot better in this version.
Oh, it is.
But it's still terrible.
Yeah, it is.
Someone just made a mention of, I guess this is 3DS related, Minoru, one of our Japanese correspondents, mentioned Pushmo, which is a 3DS download title in Japan that should be coming out in North America, hopefully by the end of the year. Which is apparently very good. Hopefully they will talk. Oh, okay, Don, you can talk about it?
Yeah, I played it.
Cool. All right, so talk about Pushmo a little bit. I don't know if that would be a game of the year title for you, but it seems to be getting a lot of love.
There's not much eShop titles in this list. I think we don't have any at all, so I think that would be my eShop title of the year, actually.
VVVVVV for me.
Yeah,
it's not out yet, but it's going to be.
Okay. Well, it's not going to be out in Europe for the end of the year.
Well, there you go.
But so I don't know much about Pushmo. Do tell.
Pushmo, you basically push blocks forward and back to the background, and you make a path and try to get up top of a puzzle and grab a flag or a small, I think a small child, and then you complete a stage. They recently updated the game so you can now exchange levels. So first you have to play your own made level first one time and finish it. With all the elements, you can do all the puzzle elements, all the colors, everything you want. And after that, it will automatically make a QR code for you. You can save it on an SD card and give it to your friends. I think it's a pretty interesting title, and of course, it's made by Intelligent Systems, so you would expect something good from them.
Yeah,
you would.
Indeed. Yeah.
So yeah, that's my eShop title of the year. That was very quick. Because great. I could talk about all the classics games, but I could say sum them up in one word, except for Kirby.
Kirby's fantastic.
Kirby's amazing.
But it's not like because it's a 3D classic, it's because it's a great game to begin with. And it's
I think the 3D effect on that is really, really cool.
It's nice, but it's, I don't know, it's the best 3D classic because it's the best game that was on 3D classics.
All the other games are arcade experiences. This is, you know, a console game.
I thought Twinbee. I like
Twinbee was very good. I like Twinbee a lot, yes.
Yeah. Although Kirby does blow it out of the water because it has an auto-save system.
And since we're mentioning eShop games, I don't think this is game of the year, but I had a lot of fun with Pyramids.
That was very good.
I mean, if you like puzzle platformer kind of things, old school kind of games, you should definitely look into that.
Yeah.
I think you can find...
Donkey Kong 94. If we're bringing Virtual Console
also,
into this.
Mario's Picross is delightful.
Wanted to mention, if you would like new puzzles for Pyramids, the guys from Enjoy Gaming actually put a new puzzle up on their Facebook page.
Oh, cool. Yeah, because they have, I believe...
QR codes, doesn't it? Right? Yeah. It's something.
Yeah, QR codes.
I haven't finished the game yet, but that's definitely something I'll look into.
As far as my Virtual Console game of the year goes, for the eShop at least, because the Wii didn't get as
much. There doesn't have a Virtual Console anymore.
Although Final Fantasy III would be a good pick for that. Super Mario Land 2 to get 6 golden coins.
Donkey Kong 94. Donkey Kong, it's the first time I ever played Donkey Kong 94, and it's amazing. I played through that whole thing pretty quick, and I love it.
Well, Link's Awakening, I loved. I'd never played it before, but I got really into that.
Yeah, that's a fantastic game.
Like, there was a stretch where, coming up on our next 3DS game that I put on the list, I was, like, pretty much playing that and Ghost Recon Shadow Wars, like, in tandem, like, all summer. That was my routine. I'd stay up, I'd play those two games, and I'd have, like, Doctor Who on in the background. And, like, that's when I think of summer now. That's what I think of, for better or worse, I guess.
Oh, we can't forget Pokemon Pokedex 3D.
Moving on. I mean, I guess other 3DS games, you know, Super Mario 3D Land and Skylanders, which is a friggin' awesome platformer, like 3D platformer made by Vicarious Visions for 3DS. I was totally surprised by it. I did not think it would be that good, and it was very, very good.
It is good. You actually convinced me to buy that the day after.
I bought it. I went to the event for Skylanders, but I only got to play the console version. I bought the 3DS version basically just on Neil's review, and I love it. It's great. But I mean, I'm like all into Skylanders. I mean, not as much as some people around here, but I do have I do have enough of the toys to have one of each type. So I am part of the problem.
Well, I haven't bought any extra figures. I didn't bought into the hype, but I still enjoyed myself just playing.
All right, I think we're going to try to bring on Sarek to talk Skylanders with us and possibly more.
All right, more stuff.
Are you there, Sarek?
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, what's up?
Hey. Love me some Skylanders.
Hey. Dude, totally.
Hey, real quick while you guys are talking Skylanders, all I know about it is that you buy toys and you put them into the game. Can you talk a little bit about like what you actually do in the game?
It's like a 3D platformer, kind of like Mario / Spyro esque.
I don't know. I would put it more like a brawl. Think about a brawler than think about the platforming in Mario.
think the console version's more like a brawler, but the
it's more Lego-esque.
The 3DS version's more of a platformer because in that, the console version doesn't even have a jump button, so it's, although you can hover.
With a good deal of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, the hover comes in handy in the 3DS version, but yeah, it's mostly a platforming, and I really like the how Hector shows up as soon as you get your objective.
It's that does
Cosmic Mario chasing you.
So I guess to kind of explain it, like you go into these different levels, and there's, you know, like five crystals that you need to collect, and it's usually like, you know, kill three of these enemies, get to the end of the stage, et cetera, collect these things, and whenever you get one of those crystals, and you can usually get multiple of them in one run, but when you get your first one, then this villain Hector will start to chase you, and there will be a timer on the screen, and you can collect more time to add to the clock. But if it gets down to zero, then you're dead. You have to start.
I think under a minute, it already becomes intense because the lightning strikes all around you.
Yes, yes.
I thought that was 30 seconds where he starts beams at you.
Okay, 30 seconds. I really want to go back and take all my new characters that are still in the packaging and play more Skylanders, but time is a fickle machine.
I need to go back and play some more of that. But I know we're not talking about Mario, but Mario is what's getting all my time right now.
What's the point of having different characters in that game?
The characters are really different.
Yeah, I mean, I am impressed at how different they got to make them, considering how many of them there are.
I believe there's 30-something total right now. I think they have about 25 in the wild.
It's 32. It started with 32.
Yeah, well, I think it's 32 plus the legendaries and the Dark Spyro variant.
Stealth Elf all the way.
Dude, Stealth Elf is awesome. Stealth Spyro
tears everything up in those levels where you have just mobs coming at you. There's also the levels are structured. You've got about five levels, and there's about two that are just sort of mob stages.
You know, I haven't even played my copy of the console version. I've only played the 3DS version so far.
I was like the football multiplayer game.
No, because you played that when you went out to California to visit Toys for Bob.
That was that was my favorite part of the game, and that whole thing was the multiplayer. But specifically,
it was fantastic.
I
want to see more things like that, where it's basically an arena. Like they have an arena battle mode where it's PvP, and then they have this football mode where there is like a crystal football that you need to pick up, and you can beat each other. Like whoever has the football can't attack, but the other person then attacks them and tries to get the football out. And you can either throw it through the goalpost or take it to the goalpost, and you either get a field goal or a touchdown for your
trouble. It's like the multiplayer is like, I wish there was online. I wish you could play with more than two people because the multiplayer in that game is so fantastic.
Yeah,
but I'm not going to have much chance to play it because you need to have people in person to play it. And I mean,
yeah,
so.
I've talked about it on the show before, and about my fiance and I and how we love to play co-op games together. It's like, this is what I'm on the fence about, just because I know it's an extra investment with having to buy the toys. But if the multiplayer is as great as you say,
let's put it this way, Scott, you're paying $20 more to get the portal and three characters. It might suck you in, and you'll be buying more, but at a base value, you have a pretty awesome co-op game for $70 that has a pretty cool mechanic that you can buy more characters if you want to.
You'll be missing out on certain things if you don't buy characters, but you can complete the game without buying anything
more. Yeah, and it's not like the added $20 price is really that ridiculous, at least in my eyes.
Yeah, it is.
I think I didn't even bother characters, and I had a blast of a time, so it didn't bother me as much. So.
Okay. Well, maybe
I would rather buy Poison Ivy.
That's a decision.
Now, is that a figure, like a nearly nude figure of Poison Ivy? Okay, that's what I thought.
All right. Well, so what would your 3DS game of the year be so far, or DS for that matter?
Well, I don't really have a DS one stuff. I've been sort of relegated to kids stuff, but I would actually probably go with Skylanders for the minute, just because Super Mario 3D Land, it has to me a very weak beginning. And everything. Once you get to the end, it really picks up.
See, I'm only a few worlds in, and I don't get this whole weak beginning thing that everybody else seems to be having. I hope I'm not first on
that one.
But I mean, I agree to a certain extent, but it picks up later. You shouldn't worry too much.
I don't know. Yeah. Maybe it's just because I'm going for all the coins right away, but it doesn't seem as easy as a lot of people. Hopefully I'm not just bad at the game. That would be disappointing. But maybe not, because I'm enjoying it. I'd rather enjoy it than be too good.
All right. Well, thanks, Eric, for calling. I think we'll let you go. We got to move along here.
Okay.
And, yeah, we appreciate it. Good to finally attach a voice to this guy on Twitter who I'm always talking to.
Yes. On the forums.
Exactly. Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, thanks.
Keep classy, sir.
All right.
So what are we moving on to next?
Yeah, Scott? Let's just real quick wrap up 3DS. There were a couple games. I think we'll just spend a second on these. Well, first of all, JP really wanted to talk about, I think, both Pilot Wings and FIFA 12.
I would also like to talk about Pilot Wings.
And yes. And then Dan threw on Sonic Generations, which he just got and has been playing. Are you playing it for review, Dan?
Yes.
Okay, so he's got that for 3DS. So let's talk about those for a minute, and then we'll move on to WiiWare and DSiWare games.
So you want to start with Pilot Wings, Neil?
Yeah, so Pilot Wings was a launch game, and despite, I guess, kind of, I mean, maybe not having the best first impression, I think it's really, really good. Like, I just like the mechanics in that game. I think it does a lot of good things for 3D, and it's a lot of fun.
It's of the launch games, it's definitely the one that stuck with me the most. I think it's
great. I agree.
It may not have as much content as a lot of people would like, but I still got a lot of time out of it. I had a great time with it. I think it's one of the first games to really show off the 3D of the console. I really like it. I mean, I think as far as launch games go, it's really good.
I think I spent a good 20 hours on that game. I really enjoyed that, yeah.
Well, I didn't get quite that much, but I was up there.
I think I got 10 to 15 hours in it.
Yeah,
and,
I
still haven't even... I haven't three-starred everything yet, so, I mean, I'm missing the last couple missions, but that is a game that I could see myself going back to during some kind of slow time.
I think there are still some missions I haven't finished. I think I have three stars on it. I think there are three stars on everything that I've completed, but I haven't finished all the missions.
It's a really good game.
Yeah. And then to go into FIFA 12, it's just if you like sports games, if you like soccer games, this is a fantastic game. It's
football.
Got everything. Yes. Well, I'm an American here. It's called soccer.
Yeah. We'll be talking about football when we get to Wii.
There you go. But it's great. I mean, it's got all the modes you could want. It's got a really deep career mode that I've just kind of gotten lost in, and I'm. Great gameplay and all the modes. It's like I wish the Madden that was at the 3DS launch had this kind of depth. It would have been.
I agree.
I think it's certainly a good game, although it kind of disappoints me that this year of football doesn't have any sort of online play on the 3DS.
That's really the one thing I can say against it is there's no online play. But I think other than that, I think it's just great. I mean,
Oh yeah, certainly. Yeah.
Yeah, to me, I mean, like it was probably my favorite game on the system until Mario 3D Land came out. So, I
can see that.
You know, that's really all I have to say.
So, a pretty solid sports game, though, and maybe unexpectedly so.
Maybe the best. What I would say is it's the best handheld sports game I've ever played, or at least the best handheld sports sim that I've ever played. I mean, they really did a great job.
PES, going back to PES, PES was horrible in that comparison.
In comparison. I gave it, what did I give it, a 7.5, I think, at the launch game. But, I mean, this just blows that out of the water. This is so much better than that game. It's just way, way better than that game.
All right, well, we are currently at $2,521. We are less than $800 away from our goal. We are sitting at 79%.
Damn.
And we are less than $300 away from unlocking Jeopardy. So
come on, bring it on. There you go. Come on.
Trebek demands it.
I guess lastly, Dan, did you want to say something about Sonic Generations before we move on?
It's pretty good. It's a completely different game than the HD experiences, but it does some things different. Like, for example, to keep in character with how Sonic progresses, they actually gave the classic Sonic the homing attack after the Mega Drive ones, and they have different stages in there. And there are like 100 missions. The only things I have against it, I guess, is that the remixed music is not as good as the HD versions.
Oh, okay.
Except for Tropical Resort. Tropical Resort, the remix of that. I don't know if any people play their Sonic Colors. No?
Nope.
No, I should have, but I never did.
Not.
I eventually, but I haven't yet.
But if you ever saw the first stage, the Tropical Resort stage, they actually completely remix the music of that with bumming guitars and everything. It's really, really cool. And they did something in comparison to the HD versions. What they did with some of the stages that they couldn't have come at it. Like some of the HD stages, they try to reimagine things of those old days, and sometimes it didn't work. Here, it feels on the 3DS game, it never feels out of place. They did everything with a certain purpose in mind. Like, again, for most people, Nintendo gamers will recognize Sonic Colors, so I will say it again. The classic stage will remind you a lot of Sonic Colors on DS, and the modern one will remind you a lot of the Wii game. And that's the best thing I can say about it. It feels like a rounded package.
The funny thing is that you say the classic levels will remind you of Sonic Colors, the DS game, makes me never want to play this game. I really did not like Sonic Colors, the DS game.
I'm talking about only about instances about the level from the Colors era. All the levels, the classic levels and all the other levels are different and they greet.
Yeah, but doesn't it control, it's by dimps, right? Doesn't it control more like the Sonic Colors, like Sonic Colors, Sonic Rush?
The later on, the classic stages a little bit do. I think the modern stages, as further as they grow, become more like the 2D view of Sonic Colors on Wii.
All right, that's kind of cool, I guess. I mean, yeah. I'm still someone who was never really that enamored with Sonic Rush, especially not really enamored with Sonic Colors last year. Like, I'll just stick to replaying Sonic 2 every now and then. I mean, it's really like I'm tired of being super disappointed with Sonic games.
Yeah, it's like I'm a huge fan of the series from back on the Genesis, but I could never get into the Sonic Rush games. Although I liked the early Sonic Game Boy Advance games, but
yeah, Sonic
Rush,
Advance 1 and 2, I really
those
dug.
Those were very good, and then the Rush I've just never liked. But the videos I've seen of Generations on 3DS are promising, so I'm somewhat interested in that game.
And, then the mission side of things, that's also pretty interesting because you have like 100 missions to choose from, which you can unlock through Street Pass or through Play Coins. You pay 5 Play Coins, they get another mission to play.
There you go.
Set in those several stages, in those several areas, which is pretty cool. And you get a little bonus for it if you complete them. So
I've been stuck at 300 Play Coins since about a week after I got the system, and I haven't had anything to spend them on because I never went in and did anything with the...
Find me!
I never did that. You know, everybody talks about it, but I just didn't seem...
It sucks so much.
That's the thing. I've got way too many 3DS games so that I could just go play one of them.
Do you have DOA?
No, I don't.
Oh, well, get that and then spend all your Play Coins on trophies.
Buy Sonic Generations and you will have them gone in a heartbeat because you will keep spending all of those missions like I did because I wanted to see what there was next.
I was already kind of interested in Sonic Generations. I'm going to look more into this. So
well, there you go. Let's go ahead and move on from the 3DS now. And before we get to WiiWare and DSiWare and eShop and all that goodness, I believe we have another caller.
All right.
I think, let's see.
Maybe.
I'm not sure. I thought he was ready to go.
Caller here. Caller.
I really want to play Moto Heroes.
I was going to say, Dan, why don't you talk a little bit about some WiiWare games? Even in the chat, someone said if we don't mention Moto Heroes, that we're in trouble. So,
okay. Mentioned Moto Heroes.
Moving on.
were you not getting into
it? I like Moto Heroes, but I'm just at the half of that point of the game. I haven't even finished it. But it's a good game. I like it a lot. There's short and snappy stages in there. And the multiplayer is brilliant. I actually played more of the multiplayer aspect of it with friends. And we got really into it.
And Johnny just told me that we have a Moto Heroes, copy to give away. But for Canada residents only.
Yeah. So. I believe that is courtesy of Daniel, one of the new programmers on staff, I believe. Oh, there you go. If I got that wrong, I'm sorry. He's from Canada, so I just assumed. But yeah, what else on WiiWare? I mean, Bitcher of Flux is really good, and then we have the Complete and Saga games that were for Wii and 3DS that brought the whole collection. I think Flux is fantastic, especially when you take the whole series as a whole, because the story that they tell throughout it, I mean, it takes a backseat to the gameplay, but it's kind of cool. And I mean, it's beautiful in a way, I would say.
I think Bitcher of Flux will be my WiiWare game of the year, because I've spent 2 years just wondering what's next and wondering about the story and how it wraps up on the final stages, the stage home. It's beautiful. Like, it's just a perfect end.
Yeah, it really is. Like, that series is delightful.
Yeah. I haven't played any of the BitTrip games on Wii, but I bought the collection for 3DS, so I'm interested to jump in and give them a try.
I've never played any of them ever.
Yeah, me neither, but I know that I should.
I would, in all honesty, I would look for Complete or Saga, depending on if you want to play it on Wii or 3DS. I mean, maybe wait for a price drop if you're concerned about that. They're both $40 right now, but if they drop to 20 or 30, dude, get it.
Okay. My big issue with a bit of Saga and Complete, it lessens the impact of Beat a little bit, because Flux is there next to each other. Because Flux is, in all honesty, in all little pieces and bits, just the better game.
All right, Miguel, are you here?
Yes, I am.
Hi.
Hey.
So what game of the year do you want to talk about?
I wanted to bring up, you guys already brought it up, Layton 4.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It is great. The reason I bring it up for Game of the Year is because it's the first Layton game I've ever played. I've heard great things about it.
Awesome.
What I loved about it was that it included London Life. It had a lot of content there, and it really felt like it was a great buy for $30. Like, I was really
Agree.
London Life!
I played the first Professor Layton a few years back. I for whatever reason I didn't get around to another one until this one. This is the first one I bought since then, really because of London Life. I haven't had a chance to play it yet, but I'm excited.
I really like London Life. It's the kind of thing that I see myself going back to more whenever I have time.
Yeah, I totally meant to pick this up, and then I think it kind of came out around the time like Batman came out and stuff, and I just totally
I want to get around to it before the actual 3DS Animal Crossing comes out, because that's really why I bought it, because I'm a big Animal Crossing fan. I wanted something to tide me over until that comes out, so I have to get around to it before then.
Oh yeah.
Well,
anything else, Miguel?
And also, I just, the last question I had was, do Virtual Console games count for the 3DS? Are you guys including that?
We were actually debating on that.
I am.
And
we actually did.
I think you have to. Yeah, I mean, we mentioned them a little bit, but I mean, I don't know if like when you get to the granular, like we're giving out awards, like you're probably not going to give DK94 Game of the Year for 3DS when it came out 17 years ago, but it's very, very good.
Realistically, when you're giving out the actual awards, at least to me, it seems like the award's going to Mario 3D Land, which we haven't really talked about at all. This is more
There's no need to.
Yeah. So, but I think there have been some great titles on the Virtual Console, both in terms of like bona fide classics and some, you know, underrated things. A lot of
Cat Rap, man. Cat Rap.
I have really enjoyed Cat Rap, which I bought. I bought it because of this site, and also because I've bought every Virtual Console game that's come out so far. But I mean, I played it because of that, and that's great. But really, like I said earlier, Donkey Kong 94 is really phenomenal. I mean, if it counted, it would be near the top of my list of the 3DS games that came out this year.
For Virtual Console 3DS games, the two that really stand out to me, obviously, Link's Awakening. That was great. DX, Link's, they threw in there.
I haven't started that yet, but yes, that would be in the same discussion.
I never finished it.
So good.
And then Mario Land 2.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's quite good.
I think what killed me with Mario Land 2 is that I played it so much when I was a kid that going back to it now, I basically could have sleptwalked through that game.
I mean, we
which I don't think it's really a knock on the quality of that game. It's just a knock on the fact that I played the crap out of that game when I was a kid. But I did the same with DK94.
I think the nice thing is that the only virtual console game for 3DS that has come out so far that I've played in the past in any real way was Link's Awakening, which, I mean, I haven't started the 3DS virtual console version, but that's the only one I play. All the rest of them are new to me. So, like, Donkey Kong, I get to play Donkey Kong 94 for the first time. Yeah. I had to play Super Mario Land 2 for the first time. And, I mean, those were great things to have. I mean, we're starting to get more good 3DS games now, but
even
for a while...
Gargoyle's Quest, man. Gargoyle's Quest is awesome.
Gargoyle's Quest.
I mean, like, there was a while where there was nothing coming out. And so that those games were great to have in that span and to give you some to play on the system.
One last question that I'd have for you guys, though, just pertaining to 3DS, you know, virtual console games... What games are you guys really looking forward to and you're really hoping that Nintendo includes in their catalog for the 3DS?
Virtual console.
Mario Tennis for Game Boy Color.
Oh, yeah.
Game Boy Advance games.
Yeah, what's the story with those?
Shantae would be another.
Oh,
Tokitori for Game Boy Color.
Yeah, Tokitori. I'd love to play that. I mean, really, I'm eating up Game Boy Virtual Console on 3DS. I love it.
I would take the
Game Boy Color version of Bionic Commando.
Yeah, Wario Land.
We had a thing on the site recently about Super Mario Brothers Deluxe, and I think that added some cool stuff.
Yes.
To the game. I'd like to see that on there.
Great game.
I would love to see Pokemon Red and Blue re-released.
Yeah, that would be really cool. Yellow. I don't know if that'll happen, but that would
They've
be really
They've remade
cool.
Red and Blue, but I would like to see Yellow because that was an interesting thing that we've never really seen.
Oh, yeah, Yellow was awesome.
Yeah, Yellow would be cool. But we wouldn't get the Pikachu Walker.
That's true.
I'd actually like to see Metal Gear Solid.
That's supposed to be very good. I believe Jared Ghost Rosenberg Babel, covered right? that back in
yeah,
the future.
I would like to see it because that was a very innovative Game Boy game. I mean, it played a lot like the original Metal Gear Solid on PS1, and that was a very impressive title. I think it would be neat, you know, to be on the catalog.
Yeah,
we're getting kind of near the end, and we haven't really talked about the Wii at all outside of some Skylanders talk.
There's not much to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's move on to that. Thanks a lot, Miguel, for calling in.
Like I said earlier, I said I wasn't sure, and I went back and looked while we were talking. I have not bought a Wii game this year. The newest Wii – I have my Wii games in my thing in the order in which I bought them, and the most recent one is GoldenEye 007, which I got for Christmas last year.
Yeah, that's the last game I've actually played on my Wii. Then it broke, and I haven't missed it at all.
I like that game a lot, but there's a few – worth talking about.
I want to do my cursory mention of Madden 12 on Wii, which it's more of a testament to how crappy things have been on Wii this year that's even in consideration for that coveted spot after Zelda on Game of the Year. I really like Madden on Wii. I still do. It's been like 3 years and I love every iteration of it. So, yeah.
Yeah, that'll work. We talked about a little bit earlier, but Kirby's Return to Dreamland. Is wonderful. We did a segment on that for connectivity too.
The thing with Kirby's Return to Dreamland is I became a lot less interested in it as soon as they announced Kirby's Adventure as a 3D classic. I mean, it's not really fair to the game, but it's like, I'm never going to have anyone to play co-op with. And it's like, if I'm going to play a traditional 2D Kirby game, I'm going to play Kirby's Adventure, which may be the best one of those.
My question about Return to Dreamland is that where was he? Isn't that where he lives?
No, he was in Epic
was
Yarn.
He on vacation?
I don't know.
I think it's kind of like a look. This is a regular Kirby game. We haven't had one of these on a console in forever.
It's basically it's the Donkey Kong Country Returns, new Super Mario Bros.
Yeah, it's a return to form, if you will.
Rayman Origins is another return to form. That came out on Wii this past week. I've been playing that. That's a fantastic platformer.
It
looks beautiful.
Things.
It does not look as beautiful on Wii. Like I hate to be that guy parroting the HD graphic thing, but this was a game that was kind of made for 360 and PS3. It's still really good on Wii. It doesn't hurt the gameplay at all, but I've compared the demo on 360 on an HD TV to the Wii game on HD TV, and there's no comparison. It looks way better on 360.
Funny story I haven't told about when I played it. I played it with the actual developers, and they didn't even know how to hold a Wii controller.
Oh, God. Yeah, I mean, you can use a Wii Remote on its side. I believe Wii Remote Nunchuck and Classic Controller for that game, too. So that's cool. You got a lot of options.
I'm holding off for the 3DS version, which is supposed to be coming early next year. But I'm very encouraged by what I've heard of the game.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, I played the demo on PS3 and of Rayman Origins, and it was awesome. And I'm definitely going to get it, I think, probably next week.
Hey, yeah. TYP just mentioned Conduit 2.
Yeah.
That was
I believe what Zach, you reviewed that, right?
I did.
Yeah, and I played it as well. Holy crap. Like, sorry, High Voltage Software. Like that game, like what the hell happened?
Please stop making Conduit games.
Yeah, like maybe the 3DS one? No, it'll probably still be bad.
real quick before we go on to our last couple Wii games we have here, I guess a little money update. Yeah, we've crossed 2,600 now.
We're at 2,771.
Yeah, which I guess beats.
Wait, when did that happen?
Beats what we raised last year, and gets us even closer to Jeopardy. So yeah, let's keep that going.
We are Eric awesome. We are less than $30 away from Jeopardy.
Bring it on, Aaron! Come on, I'm gonna lose so bad.
$29.
So bad.
That means I'm gonna have to come back in 3 hours.
Yeah, you didn't think it was gonna happen.
Oh no.
Okay, let's continue before the end. But the time runs out.
Yeah, we're running low on time here. Now,
Skyward Sword wins the end.
I want to give Dan a minute here to talk about Xenoblade Chronicles. Now, none of us have played it because it's not here in America, and I guess we didn't want to hack.
People have imported it.
My roommate imported it, and I've watched him play a lot of it, and it looks very good.
Yeah, so Dan, why don't you talk about that for a minute? Why is it your? I think you even said just flat out, it's your Wii game of the year. What's so great about it?
You haven't even played Zelda. What the hell?
Well, that's fair.
But well, go ahead, I know what Zelda is, and with Xenoblade, I didn't know what to expect of it. So that was my big concern at the beginning. But once played, every single concern was away. Like the scope of the world. The way how you run around it and explore every single detail of it and all the side questing in every single cranny, it is just a fantastic game to play from start to finish. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that game. And it doesn't matter how the way you play it. You can play it with the Classic Controller Pro or with an Wiimote and a Nunchuck. It's just... Wow. That game just... blew my mind and is possibly one of the best RPGs I played this generation. May possibly for years to come. This will possibly be my new standard as it comes to RPGs.
Wow.
I still, like, I've read so many good things about it, heard people say so many good things about it, and I just don't have the urge to bother importing this. And I don't really know why. Like, I like RPGs, but I think Xenoblade... if it actually came out in North America, maybe I'd get it. But I just don't know if I'd really play it that much.
I think
if I actually
would.
Got it. I don't think I would.
I think it's the only thing that maybe it has against it is that you just have to start in, have a startup issue that you just have to go in and actually play it. But once you get in there, it doesn't let go of you. You won't get lost of it, and it will keep in your mind for at least a couple of weeks. So that would be my own issue. You'll just have to need to start and just play it.
I mean, my thing is that, like, I hear a lot of people saying about how good it is, but I feel like I haven't really heard a lot of proof of how good it is. People just say how good it is. And it's like,
Apparently it's very good.
The combat's like Final Fantasy XII. Well, guess what? Combat in Final Fantasy XII, it was okay, but I'm not really that crazy about it. Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm just crazy.
This is a game I'll import and, you know, hack my Wii to play come like, ooh, I don't know, spring next year when there's probably absolutely nothing to play on the Wii at all.
There's
right?
a chance that might happen with me and maybe my tune will change. But it's just like I feel like a lot of what people are saying about this game, it's really good. And I don't hear much like it's really good because, and the because is usually like the combat's really good. And then people say the combat's like Final Fantasy XII. But
maybe they'll up-res it and it'll be
I'll get Villa 5 title.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, someone said Xenoblade's combat is like if Final Fantasy XII was a good game. So,
but for me, it's not the combat system that sold me on the game. It's really just the scope of it and how you explore the world. And it's the world. It's bigger than its story.
What makes exploring the world so much fun? Like, what's the reward?
It's how do you how do you say it? It comes in the little things. You just need picks up. You just see the world moving around you. It's a living, breathing world. And that's something I haven't seen much on Wii at all.
So it's like a sandbox game?
A sandbox game. That's a pretty interesting way of describing it.
Like, I mean, that's what it is. When I hear living, breathing world, I think of something like a Grand Theft Auto. I mean, I'm sorry for, like, pressing you about this, but it's something that, like, I haven't been sold on this game, and I don't know why.
Yeah, you're very much on the offensive here.
Bashing the European, huh? Yeah, maybe you should ask Project Rainfall to try harder. But anyway, it's a brilliant game, and I could actually. I think we need to do a separate section on this because I
You know what? Yeah, let's curve this for a connectivity episode somewhere down the line. I would really love to talk more about this game because I want to be sold on it.
Yeah, I would love. So what I quickly want to say: West of WiiWare Fast Racing League was really good.
Yeah, it looked really good. Never played it. Heard good things.
Yeah. Once right, 60 frames per second.
Sorry, Dan. We've got a couple minutes here. I just want to say we passed 2800, so Jeopardy's a go. We're getting getting close to 100% there. We'll unlock the final segment, which is Shenanigans, which is Carl, you know, just
drunk.
living
it'll
life.
It'll be like Carl. Just like we'll all step into Carl's head for an hour.
I like my idea of it should be me drunkenly arguing with everyone else on staff and all the people calling in.
Guys, we get past 3200, just start drinking, because when we get to Shenanigans, all bets are off.
No, I'm drunkenly arguing for why. I'll be drunkenly
invited to Shenanigans.
But
Carl.
You don't know Jack. You don't know Jack for Wii.
Oh, yeah.
Total
great
stealth
game
of the year. I got it on a Target clearance and spent like 2 or 3 hours last night playing it with friends.
It's
fantastic.
Excellent.
Yeah, I got this a few months ago, and it had to be on my list. It is so much fun. It's probably like my multiplayer game of the year, I would have to say. As much as I love Kirby and everything, You Don't Know Jack with four people is just fantastic.
It is awesome. Yeah.
I would just like to state that Carl just said in our Skype chat that Shenanigans equals Red Velvet Story, which some of you astute listeners remember from PAX East, where I believe Johnny introduced Carl as Red Velvet. It's a good story. I hope we get it. And everyone hold him to it, because now it's been mentioned on the stream.
Nice.
So, yeah. Man.
So the last game we should bring up is two games are Super Mario Land 3D is awesome and Skyward Sword is awesome. And
I want to say in 1 minute the Azira games I actually wrote down for this. But
we're not having time
to talk about it.
Go ahead. We got a minute at least. Yeah, you can name them.
Four Swords.
Yes.
Oh, that was good. Yeah.
Yeah. Go Polo, which I think nobody played.
I played it. It's very good. I was kind of surprised by that. It's a cool, like old-fashioned, like kind of fast-paced arcade game where you're a cat scratching things.
Picton, which is a sort of RPG type-ish game, that's also pretty good. And then finally, Inchworm Animation, which I think nobody played again. But you can take 60 frames of video. You can make your own animation, not like Flipnote, far more advanced.
Oh, it's good.
But Inchworm Animation, I think that's my DSR game of the year. That's really good.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Oh.
Now Carl's going back on his world. Or
he is.
Word.
Okay, that's done. DSR, all the things.
Awesome. Well,
it was a good year. It was a good year for games, I feel.
It was
slow in parts, but there are a lot.
I don't know if it was. I don't really think you could call the Wii releases this year a good year.
No, not at all. But DS 3DS, very satisfactory.
There was no Metroid Other M this year, you know? So,
So that means there were less good games. Yeah.
Hey, we at least got Xenoblade Chronicles.
There you go. Well, some of us.
There you go.
So, yeah, well, thanks a lot, guys, for listening. And anyone who's been here all day listening, you guys are amazing. And the fact that we've raised this much money is, like, incredible and
kind
inspiring.
Amazing,
I mean, the fact that you guys would pay this much just to listen to us bullshit for all day, it's incredible. And it's really – I mean, this is my first year here doing this, and it's amazing. And this whole experience has been wonderful, and I really appreciate it. And you guys are awesome.
For the kids, man. For the kids.
All right, time to play the music, folks. This is TYP.
All right.
Ready for his
next
segment. And I have to say, I just threw in $50 on the promise of Red Velvet Story. So, no pressure, Carl.
All right. All Talk to you guys for Jeopardy.
All right, I'll see you guys. Bye-bye. I'll see you for Jeopardy. See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
So this is going to be a little quieter than last segments. There's been a lot of talking. We're going to mix things up a little bit with some music. This is going to be a radio trivia hour. And for those unfamiliar with radio trivia, the idea is that we play music from video games that have been from Nintendo platforms. And you have to figure out what game it is based on the music. So we are going to have James in the chat room, who is going to be accepting guesses. I believe you'll be PMing James and his name, I believe in the IRC, is NWR_James, but he'll post in the chat room. So you're going to text him, like a personal PM to him in IRC help, and he will get someone who knows the game, and you can come on and on Skype, and you'll be able to tell the world what game this is, and maybe talk about it for a few minutes. So it's a lot of fun. And like I said, it's a change of pace from all the chatting. Greg, are you with us?
I am with you. The listeners should know from both RFN and Radio Trivia Podcast Edition that I do enjoy very much this show, this format. So I'm very eager to participate as best I can.
James, why don't you chime in and make sure everyone knows how to contact you?
Yeah, so I'm in the IRC chat. Again, like I said, it's NWR_James, and just send me the PM, send me your guess and your Skype name, because I'm going to need both, and then we'll move on from there.
Right, and if you know it, you win, you get picked by James, you can win a prize. I don't think we've mentioned this quite yet on the show, maybe in the very beginning, but there are prizes.
There are a lot of prizes.
If you go to the main page for this event, the charity event, there is a list of prizes down below the schedule. There's under swag, and you can choose any one of those things and we will get it to you. I think a few of the games, there may be regional restrictions, but other than that, we ship to anywhere is my understanding. So please play along. If you know it, contact James and you can win a cool piece of swag.
Yep.
So I think we'll probably get through four games, but we'll see. I have plenty lined up. Kind of depends on how quickly we go through these. So why don't we get started with the first one? And if you have any questions or are not clear on something, just text in the IRC chat room and James can clarify. Here we go. Here's the first game out of three songs for each game.
Thank you.
All right. That was the first song from the first game. There are three songs. If you know what it is, contact James Jones. And I've been told we're only $309 away from Shenanigans. So awesome job, guys. Keep it coming.
Be careful what you wish for. That's all I'm going to say.
Stuff.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's all me, that one.
Well, we got one last song here. I believe we do have a correct answer, so you'll find out what it is. Jimmy J says he has someone who knows the answer. Let's see if we can get that caller in here to tell the world. James? I know it. I know Greg knows it.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
here we go. Yeah. Here we go. Let's see. Ah, friend Tom Manila. Let's see if we can get him on here. Say Manila Melina. Sorry, I apologize if I misspoke your name. Hello, Tom. Are you there?
Hello.
Hey. All right. You know what game this is?
I'm fairly sure I know what it is. Is it Super Mario Galaxy 2?
It is Super Mario Galaxy 2. Of course, a favorite of both Greg and mine.
Oh yes.
So, do you have a particular prize you're eyeing here in the big list?
Is the DS copy of Jam with the Band still available?
I believe everything is still available. So,
oh, come on, you could get that for £4 there in the corner. You live here. Come on. And then maybe they're all gone there.
Is that your final answer, Tom?
Well, I would like one of the Wii games or WiiWare games, but that's region restricted, so.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't have much of a choice. You're right, though. I probably could get it for very cheap. Maybe. Can I look down the list just very quickly?
You know what? Why don't you text James Jones after the call and let him know what prize you want?
Okay.
But so before you go off, do you have any thoughts on Mario Galaxy 2 you wanted to share a little quick? Favorite part of the game? I mean, obviously we talked a lot about Super Mario 3D Land. How do you think this compares with Mario 3D Land? Which do you prefer, or if you played 3D Land yet?
I wish I had, but my budget's gone towards Skyward Sword, which I got just yesterday.
Once again, they came out on the same day here.
Yeah, it's so tough. It's so heavily loaded in the back. Oh, well. Well, thanks for calling in, Tom, and thank you for giving us the answer here.
Yeah, thank you for the prize.
All right. Well, I think we actually have talked plenty about Mario games.
We did.
But already. So I think in the spirit of getting as many games out there as we can for this segment, let's move on. Here's the second song from the second game. Jonathan Metz says that this song makes synthetic BBGs cry.
Oh dear me.
All right, we got one last song from this game.
I wonder if anybody gets
it. Oh dear. All right. Well, while we get the caller in here, I should mention that we are up to $3,020. That's 180 dollars away from our target. We're 94% of the way there.
That's right.
94% of the way to shenanigans. So, man, good job, guys. Wow. I mean, you don't need to stop there. I mean, if we reach our mark, keep donating, and if there are technical difficulties preventing you from donating, we will fix that. So, keep it up. This is awesome. All right. We have Donald here.
Hi.
Hi. Do you know what game it is?
Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
That's correct. I believe a lot of people guess Sonic 3, but as is the nature with radio trivia, often I'm a little sneaky and you may not be quite sure which game it is. It is Sonic Adventure 2. One of my favorite Genesis games. I only have a few Genesis games I like. Yeah. I tend to like 3 and Knuckles more. I don't know. Are you a Sonic 2 guy or a Sonic 3 and Knuckles guy?
I'm more of a 2 guy. I get to the end of this game every year, it seems like, mm-hmm. but I've never been able to beat it. And the only reason I knew the game was the first song is actually, I think, from the level select screen, because I still yes. have that code.
Yeah, it is.
I still have that code memorized to get in there.
That Metal Sonic is really hard. That's a game where, like, if you go in there... with a lot of rings, your first time, and you're able to plow through it the first time, it's a lot easier. And if you die that first time, it's a lot harder.
Yeah, because I've never been able to carry my rings in there. I think that's the problem. I beat them once, and then Robotnik's final form just wipes me out because I don't have anything left. It's terrible.
Well, you know, I have fond memories of playing as Tails. I would go over to a friend's house, and I was better at the game than they were, even though I didn't own it. So I'd let them play, and I'd just do Tails, and, like, if they were in a hard spot, I'd help them out. So those good times. Greg, did you play this game at all, or?
No, I've never played
it. You've never played it?
The Genesis Sonics beyond the first one. I played the first one. I guess it probably put me off. I suppose I've always thought about, you know, because the PAL Virtual Console versions are buggered, obviously. But I've got the Japan Virtual Console, so I've kind of, it's been on the list of things that I, you know, was considering getting.
Yeah, I used to have a version of Sonic 3 and Knuckles that was good. I can't play it anymore. I lost it. So I'm eyeing just – it's cheaper on Japanese versus console too, right? It's only
the Genesis games, Mega Drive games, of course, 600 points. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah,
you might be able to – I don't know how cheap the Sonic Mega Collection for GameCube's going for, but that might be an easier option as well, because I know that's how I play it nowadays. Is just,
yeah, that's what I lost. I had it. Lost it in the booth somehow.
Dear.
I think it goes for quite a bit, actually.
Oh.
But anyway, thanks, Don, for dialing in. Do you have a prize?
Well, I'll go for quantity and hopefully quality, the NIS America pack.
All right. I'll make a note of that. Or I don't know who's keeping tally on that, but I'll make a note of that.
I think James is handling that.
Okay, so if you could email him your details, yep. and And
personally endorsed by James as well.
I own every game in that list. Every single game.
Very good. All right, we should move on to the next game here.
All right, thanks
a
lot.
We only got an hour. Thank you. Well, before we move on, I should disclose that this game is actually not released in North America. Normally, the Radio Trivia rules is it has to be released in North America. Well, this isn't the podcast. This is kind of a special. We're doing things a little different. So this is your hint. This is not released in North America. I like that song. It's a nice song.
It's very nice.
Wow. I'd heard the music was good, but it's really good.
Yep.
All right. Well, it is my distinct pleasure to announce, and my it's an honor for me to announce that we have already reached our goal. We have over $3,200 raised for Child's Play, but there's no need to stop there. We can keep going. Keep clicking on that link from the main site. Keep donating. We've got a lot of show left, and this is an arbitrary cap. You can, you know, let's push for as much as we can get. But you know, thank you everyone who's donated. I mean, I can't put into words. Greg, please save me here.
Yeah, I'm really impressed. I'm very glad to be on the show at the moment that we broke it open. But it's all for a good cause. You can cast aside the selfish motives now of wanting to hear Carl embarrass himself and move on to just focusing on entertaining chronically ill children.
got someone coming here to tell us what game this is. Keep those donations coming, folks. We're at 101% of our target.
Yeah, it's difficult to dangle the carrot out anymore. It's just all about altruism at this point. But that's a worthy venture, I would say.
We're having some technical difficulties here.
Come on, you know you want a prize, especially after, you know, that. I don't know whether it'll make the prize any sweeter, but that soundtrack.
Hello, are you on?
Hello?
Contestant.
Hello?
Hello, we hear you.
I think I am. Am
you
I
are
on?
You on, we hear you.
Yeah, we can hear you now. Good, good.
What game is this?
Okay.
Can you tell us what game this is?
Yes, I can. This is Xenoblade or Xenoblade Chronicles.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, fantastic soundtrack. Wow. Greg chose the songs for the show, and he did a fantastic job.
I'm sorry. Give me a second. I still had my iTunes on. It was everything.
Mute your radio, folks.
Yep. But so, I mean,
sorry about that.
No problem. All right, so do you have the game?
No, unfortunately not. In fact, TYP, I apologize because I won something last year, and in all honesty, I thought I sounded like I came off a bit of a jerk last year, and I kind of want to make up for this year. But unfortunately, you gave too good of a clue at the beginning.
Yeah, I know I did.
I've never played this game, but in all honesty, if you were going to play any game this year in which you would have to announce that it was never released in the U.S.
It could have been Rhythm Heaven for Wii.
Yeah, it could be.
It could have been Rhythm Heaven
Jam with the band.
Or it could have been the Last Story, right?
It could have been the prize that we were giving out.
I mean, you know, with all those sumptuous strings and techno, I'm pretty sure that's in Rhythm Heaven, you know?
Perhaps, but considering that that the whole last 2 hours, the whole last hour has been discussion of just that, I figured, hey, I would throw my luck to the wind.
I don't have to boot you from this call now. No, I'm joking.
Well deserved.
you have someone else coming in here. I'm not sure what's going on here. But what's going on here? Miguel, did you? I'm going to have to boot you here.
Okay, that was strange.
Very good, then.
Just get crank called on the phone. I thought it was Howard Stern.
Yeah.
Just Phantom laughing at the situation.
Anyway, we have talked a lot about this game already on the show, but Greg or James, you have anything to add?
The first thing, following up from the previous segment of the Game of the Year discussion, I do hope, and I think he actually was, but I do hope that Neil was listening, because if you want to know something about why Xenoblade's good, that's part of it right there. There's plenty more.
Good.
The world design is the big thing for me, but the soundtrack is part of it. You know, it just lends the voice to the world. It's gorgeous, gorgeous stuff.
I was a little bit in the same boat because I'm just waiting for the funds in order to be able to get that game. And with Skyward Sword and Mario, they're not making it easy.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's exactly what Scott said earlier. I'll probably wind up trying to import this or borrow this from someone who's already importing it sometime in the middle of next year.
My copy will not leave this room. It's too sacred.
Yeah, don't go.
Very good, then.
It's James' copy. No, I mean, soundtrack is great. There's a lot of music. There's a fascinating Iwata asks about the soundtrack on the European Nintendo site, of course. But, you know, it's like one of the biggest tables they've ever assembled there, because they've got, you know, Mitsuda did the Chrono Trigger soundtrack. They've got Yoko Shimomura, Super Mario RPG, and then they've got a whole band, isn't it, as well, that wrote songs for it, and also it's you know, a whole section of it just dedicated to the soundtrack, because the game is huge, and so it needs a lot of music, and it does a great job of covering that time, and I just finished it, and I was just immensely satisfied with it.
So 2 points. Shimomura actually managed to basically go to war with herself over what game has the best soundtrack for me this year between this and Radiant Historia.
Mm.
But the other point is, Greg, were these the MP3s from the code I gave you from my version of the game?
Yeah.
Since I can't use them.
Yeah, that's right. I was worried, you see, because if you remember, there was the point in time where Xenoblade was out of stock everywhere, and I missed the ordering it the first time, just when they moved it forward, the timing, but it actually didn't work. So I was kind of wanting the restock, but the thing is, they had an offer where you could download the soundtrack if you bought the game within the first few weeks of it being on sale. And I thought, it's getting dicey here, so I asked for James' code because he couldn't use it. And there you go. That's helped generate this segment. But obviously, if we made it easy with the thing up front about it being an import game, but A, we want to give away prizes. We're not trying to screw anyone out of a prize here. And secondly, you just want to hear this. There's a lot of people who wouldn't have heard this music. Even if they could guess the game, just by deduction, they wouldn't have heard the music. And that's the main thing. You want to hear this stuff because it's great.
Well,
so
you guys have certainly a particular
prize
some
in mind, by the way.
Yes, I was actually interested in the little Link plush. Last year I got the little Prinny plush, so now I'm going to get him a buddy.
All right. Well,
nice.
Work with James, and you'll get your little plush.
Thank you very much, guys. Thank you very much.
All right. On to the next game. How are we doing? Oh, hold on. How are we doing on the tally here? We got 108% of our target, $3,452. Keep it coming, man. Wow. The first song. Well, I don't think we have any correct guesses yet. So if you're on the fence, you might want to contact James in the chat room. You might win a prize.
This is a tricky one. If this was the usual circumstances with me listening along at home on the podcast, I'd be pretty stumped here. I would need one of your patented bonus/hint questions to get me give me a lifeline.
Well, I'm afraid we don't have any questions prepared this time.
No.
Well, this one may be a stumper. Hey, wouldn't be authentic radio trivia without a stumper.
Wow. See, you're glad we give you the big Ipazella blend.
That's
now.
Right.
Ooh,
see?
It's too easy. Oh, yeah.
Oh, too easy. Well, someone was close, but I don't think anyone's got the answer, so I'll disclose it. It is Goemon's Great Adventure for the Nintendo 64. It's the second Goemon game, the first one being Mystical Ninja starring Goemon. I think this was called Mystical Ninja starring Goemon 2 or something in Japan even. So this is, of course, related to the old retroactive game you guys did on RFN.
Yeah.
This one's curious because it is more heavily side-scrolling heavy than some of the other Goemon games.
Yeah, they varied a lot. I mean, some of the ones that didn't come out in America, like 2 and mm-hmm. 4, I think, for the second and fourth Super Famicom games are purely side-scrolling. But yeah. Then the others tended to have another component to them.
Right, so this one, the main action stages were all side-scrolling, and then there were sections between where you're exploring the town or doing some sort of quest to make someone happy, like to get a pass so you can move on to the next section. It's Goemon, it's quirky, it's somehow simultaneously feudal Japan and futuristic Japan, robots in the fighting robots and everything. So you know the boss battles were where you're inside a mech, and you know, it's a zany game. It's pretty zany.
The giant. I think the giant robot boss battles go back to the second Super Famicom game as well, and then the third one got completely wacky because it had like it brought time travel into it, so you kind of went to like it kind of went to futuristic feudal Japan. it was pretty much the same except it had some neon lights and stuff.
This one maybe is something similar, some sort of summoning device or time travel device that's a part of the plot in this game. There's like references to who do you want to conjure, like Marilyn Monroe, and it's like what? This is feudal Japan, and they're talking about Marilyn Monroe in the past. It's like, huh? I don't know. Really, it's a crazy game.
It's impressive to me that those two for the N64 did get localized, where the ones for the Super Famicom didn't. You know, yeah. Because they're no less wacky, they're no less Japanese. And the N64 was kind of. Yeah, in general, was obviously just not as successful. It's quite surprising. Having played some on the Virtual Console, and I played 3 for the Super Famicom Virtual Console, I would be really interested in picking up the cartridges for these.
Yeah, unfortunately, these games use the memory expansion pack for the save.
Oh, That is unfortunate.
Yeah, so this one's really weird because I was watching a video of someone playing this for a little while, and when you save, it's like, okay, we've done saving. Do you want to put the Rumble Pack in now so you can use the Rumble Pack? It's like, wow, how awkward can you make this? It's like,
God, that is awkward. Yeah, I'd never really considered that because I didn't have a game like it.
Yeah, Golden Monster Adventure looks like it's really fun, though, because it does seem faster paced just because there isn't like the overworld, you know, tedium. I don't know, it's really just in the town. So it's a game I'd really like to play. I just don't think I'll ever really have an opportunity.
Nah, probably not. It's tough.
Yeah. Well, I think we're going to squeeze in one more game here. So one final chance to win some prizes on Radio Trivia, at least. Much time, so I should really just push on. That little second part, the B part. Well, I think we have an answer, but we will play one more song for those who are still thinking about it. Sorry to cut that a little short, but we are a little short on time here. We do want to give our contestant a prize here. M- While we're waiting for him to connect, I should mention that we have, if you are enjoying this segment, we do have a full podcast of this trivia music. So you can find it on iTunes or go to our website, NintendoWorldReport.com. It is called Radio Trivia Podcast Edition. And every episode is five games, three songs, and just a lot of fun. Okay, Jeremy, are you there? Jeremy, are you on? Hello? Oh, dear.
Oh, I said.
I'm not hearing anything from our call in here.
I'm trying. I'm working on it.
We only got a few minutes here, but coming up next, we're going to have the GameCube Roundtable, I believe. Is that correct?
Yep, that's right.
So standing by. Everyone's on and standing by here, and it should be a lot of fun. Let's see, how are we doing on the... on the tally here, we're at 108% still.
Yeah, that's no excuse. I won't accept stalling. Well, at least while we're on the air, you know. I mean, the donations will remain open quite a while after the show concludes. But you know, while we're here, we're still, you know, we're giving you effort in return for generosity. I think that's not unfair.
Doesn't look like Jeremy's going to be able to talk. I don't know what's going on.
He's telling me he's having some difficulties.
Well, why don't we just give him the prize? He did disclose the game. I'll tell you everyone else what it is. It is a Dragon Quest IV or Dragon Warrior IV for the NES. Of course, there was also a re-release of that fairly recently on the DS. So I thought it'd be fun to play the original. I have not played this game. I have played 1 and 2. I have not played this game, but everyone speaks highly of it. We're going to probably transition over to the next segment very shortly. What? There's some craziness going on here in Skype here. Hold on. Why don't we just transition? I think we're not going to have time for another game, so why don't we transition over to the GameCube discussion?
Can I very briefly say, since this is the last time I'm going to be on the show tonight?
Oh, sure.
Thank you.
Is it?
Yeah, well, unless I get added as an extra in some segment.
Oh, that's weird. So we're gonna have to, because we're going for the full program now, and that's hours away. We're gonna have to look at that, surely.
Yeah, I just wanted to go ahead and say thanks to everyone who has contributed to this. I'm trying to get the running tally of how many contributors we have at the moment. Hold on. Last I checked, it was 88. It's now.
It's still 88.
Okay, but still, that's great. Thanks to everybody. That's it.
How's it going, fellas?
Great. It works!
We're raising money.
I love it.
Congratulations. It looks like you're doing very, very well.
Hey, Jeff. What's up, man? How's Johnny.
Hey, Johnny.
Really appreciate you being on here. Do we have Billy on the call yet?
Is this thing on?
Dude. That's how you respond to that question.
Hello. Hey, guys.
Billy, are you aware of the status of the show right now?
No, I literally just pulled my laptop out of my bag.
Okay, we have met and already exceeded our fundraising goal for today, which
Holy
is amazing.
Shit.
Yeah.
Like our job is done. Good night, everybody.
Sweet. Now,
we got to give them what they want. And we're still raising money. We're still taking it. And I think with you guys, I have anecdotal evidence that with you guys on the show and then the 8-4 guys coming up after – we're probably going to be bringing in some additional listeners who haven't donated yet. So we're going to keep going, man. We're only about halfway done with this crazy thing. We've already been on for like 4 or 5 hours.
I haven't donated my nickel yet, so I gotta get on that.
Awesome.
But congratulations.
Well, I appreciate you guys being on here. Do we have Jeff Callis on yet?
Yeah, I'm on now if you can hear me.
Hey, dude. Yeah, we can hear you.
All right.
And what about Rick Powers? Rick,
he's in the IRC.
Okay, we'll have Rick on in a minute. This is a star-studded cast we've got here. So, all right, everybody. Greg is really the host of this GameCube retrospective, aptly titled Memoirs of a GameCube, which I think Carl came up with that. It's a great name.
Yeah.
But Greg put together some discussion notes that I'm about to open up, and he's going to lead the conversation here. But he asked me to make some introductions, and it's really going to be pretty easy because you guys probably already know all of these people. But first off, Billy Berghammer, our very honored guest. Billy, I just last night listened. I knew you were going to do it because I kind of wrote the notes for you. But I listened to your finishing move on Weekend Confirmed, and it was amazing. So thank you very much for doing that. I'm sure it's been a big help.
Oh, no problem. It was I always plug Nintendo World Report as much as possible on Weekend Confirmed, regardless if it pisses Garnett off or not.
Appreciate it. Yeah.
But this is a great cause, and I'm definitely. I'm really proud of you guys. I can't believe you already hit your goal. That's awesome.
I know. I'm kind of giddy right now. But, of course, everyone knows, I hope, that Billy founded our website about 12 years ago, 12 and a half years ago.
Yeah.
And then Billy went on to bigger, better things, and I took over for him, and I did it for a little while, and we moved on from there. But Rick Powers, are you on the call yet? Still working on Rick. Okay. Rick also worked with us back in the good old days, in the glory days of Planet GameCube. And Jeff Callis, who we had on earlier, was working for Nintendo of America at that time. So I thought he would have a really interesting perspective on all this. And Jeff promises that he's got some kind of wild stories.
Well, I don't know if they're wild. I just was there during the transition from the N64 to the GameCube. Specifically a game that was supposed to be on the former and ended up on the later. So I was right in the thick of things.
Were you producing on Eternal Darkness?
Yeah. I was up to my eyeballs in Eternal Darkness through that whole transition.
We will get into that, man. And, Rick is a huge fan of Eternal Darkness, so I know he wants to talk – I'm sure he has talked to you about that before, but we'll get into it. And then finally, Jeff Cannata, another very honored guest. This is the first time that I've talked to Jeff, and I'm really excited because I'm a big, big, big fan of Totally Rad Show and as well as his work on Weekend Confirmed. And so, Jeff, I really appreciate you being here, man.
Oh, thanks a lot, guys. I'm appreciating what you're doing. It's a great cause, and it's an awesome, awesome thing to be a part of. So thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, I have to warn you, anything you say can and will be auto-tuned against you.
I'm used to it.
Yeah, we got to check with Del Rio. Maybe he could do a mixtape out of this 9-hour podcast that we're putting together today. All right, so with all the introductions so far until Rick gets on the call.
I think I'm on the call now, am I?
Dude.
Yay.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, the legend, the myth, Rick Powers.
Oh, I'm blushing over here right now.
We haven't had you on.
It's cold. I don't know. It's freezing out here right now.
Rick, we haven't had you on a show in many, many a moon. And it is a thrill to be talking to you again, man. I haven't seen you in years, actually, which is really
too bad.
It's
been way, way, way too long.
But I think I heard you might know something about GameCube.
I might know a little something about GameCube.
Yeah.
That's right.
All right. Well, we shall see. I turn over the hosting duties to Greg Leahy, who has done a lot of work on getting all this together.
Gentlemen, all right, we're going to go back, first of all, to the very sort of earliest sort of stages of the GameCube in early 1999, which is when you started getting the reports about how it was taking shape on a technical level. And I guess, I mean, Billy, this would have been right around the time that the website was created, right? Planet in 2000.
Yeah, I mean, there really wasn't back when I launched the site. There really wasn't too much known about it outside of, I don't even know if the project name wasn't even Dolphin, known
no.
as Dolphin.
No, it
yet.
Wasn't.
It was
no,
still,
not at that point.
It was kind of still like the N2000 sort of.
Yeah, that thing kind of kicked around in the media, and IGN kind of used that a lot, and it kind of ended up, there was tons of websites that picked up on it and all that kind of thing in that early phase. But it was never actually used by Nintendo, was it? I don't think. But then at E3 that year, Dolphin you know, was the name then for the next year before it got its proper one. But
yeah,
at that
I think
stage,
Rick might have something to say about the whole Dolphin thing.
Yeah, you know, yeah. I was actually telling the folks over in the IRC chat room, and if you're not in the IRC chat room, you really ought to be because that's where it's going on. But I promised them if we hit $3,400 just after we hit our goal, I said if we hit $3,400, I'll tell the story of how I found out about the code name, and I blinked and we hit $3,400. I couldn't believe it. So, and I apologize because this story really doesn't live up to the hype because it's really pretty boring when it comes right down to it. But for those of you that don't know, Rick Powers is an alias. It's not my real name. People just think it is because it sounds like a real name. But part of the reason why I use an alias is because at the time that I was writing for Planet N 2000, I was working for a game developer. I was working for Boss Game Studios. And one day we had to go over to...
Your real name is Awesome Sauce Powers, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So,
Mr. Awesome Sauce Powers.
Esquire. So there was one day where we had to go over to Nintendo to check in on one of our builds and have a couple meetings over there. So I went over there with my boss. And as we were leaving, we ran into... one of the folks over at Nintendo, and you know, they were, you know, just kind of shooting the breeze with us a little bit, and he said, "So are you guys going to be developing for Dolphin?" And my boss Colin, you know, looked at me and I looked back at him because neither of us had ever heard of it before. And of course Colin, without, you know, missing a beat, says, "Yeah, actually we've got a couple things in the pipeline for it," even though this is the first we'd ever heard of it, because we weren't high enough on the food chain to have been privy to that sort of information. So that's where I heard about it, and I think the rest of the internet heard about it just a few minutes later when I got back to the office and posted it online. So
fired.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. That phase, you know, where everyone was kind of trying to dig up information like that, you know, all the kind of there was a certain amount of information from that period about the sort of the specs of the system that panned out quite accurately, I think, actually. But also there was a lot of speculation, and you know, the websites like Planet N 2000 dedicated to just putting everything out there. But for those of you that were in that kind of rumor mill, you know, grindstone kind of thing, I mean, what was it that you personally, being, you know, really invested in the scene just to do this, you know, wanted to hear about the system? What were you hoping for out of it following up on the N64?
Wow. I mean, there were so many things that I wanted the N64 to be that weren't, you know, like I was a big online gamer on PC, so I wanted online games. I mean, I played, you know, some online games on Dreamcast and Phantasy Star. I think I even played with a lot of guys from Planet back in the day, but you know, I really wanted online games, and you know, the internet's and high speed internet was actually kind of really gearing up and actually becoming more of a commonplace back then. So that was something I was really, really hoping for as well. So, and plus, you know, actual, not HD graphics, but, you know, more higher quality graphics, not a lot
much higher res. You couldn't really argue with
that. Yeah, the typical blurry shit that you would see on the N64 back in the day, which still was beautiful back in the day, but, you know, it kind of got old, you know, especially when you were hitting games like Perfect Dark that were running at, what, like 15 frames per second at, you know, it's just,
on a good day
with the wind was blowing right. So I don't know. I mean, I started the site because I was writing for the N64 HQ back in the day, and I really enjoyed that, and then that site closed so early, and it was more of, you know, kind of circumstances where I was between jobs and one of my buddies had free web space and, you know, allowed me to have some free web space until I melted their bandwidth problems during Space World. you know, it was just kind of a hobby that got way out of control and was really, really, really fun. And that's kind of more what drove me, was that it was just kind of like, it was a challenge and kind of uncharted territory, especially for me, But this is, you know, this was still in the early infancies of the internet. I mean, there really wasn't, you know, this was still Netscape 1.0, 2.0 kind of stuff, like Netscape. I mean, just that's all I have to say, really. Right. You know, so
in Space World, I think you already said it.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, but I think the fact it was such a kind of nascent period of the internet, I think it kind of generated more excitement in a way because there was a sense like you could find anything out, maybe, if you looked in the right place. You know what I mean? I think that probably drove a lot of people to try a lot of different sites. Certainly did for me back in that.
I will speak to the fact that I was in the company and you guys would learn things before I did. I would go to your site to find out what was going on within my own company.
Nintendo was really good about keeping their own employees in the dark.
Yeah, it was. I mean, like all of that, I didn't hear about the system until Dolphin. I'm aware of what was going on now, but at the time, I didn't even have a clue it was going on. I knew they're always working on something, right? But I didn't know until they announced Dolphin what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jeff, I mean, but within the company, did you have a sense of what Nintendo thought they really needed to do with the, you know, with the GameCube, or as it eventually became, or what the fans wanted, or any of that?
Yeah, you know? I mean, so you know, the N64, we partnered up with Silicon Graphics at the time, and the big mistake, the big learning curve from the N64 is the architecture was way too complicated. It was so hard for programmers and coders to get at the power of the machine, and we knew from almost day one that there was a small Skunkworks group within Nintendo that was hired a bunch of SGI folks to work on a board that was easier to program for, but still had a lot of the power of those old SGI machines, and it was only a matter of time to the point where they could get that architecture down to something affordable, right? Because Nintendo never sells hardware at a loss.
Well, so. Yeah, they used to not.
Yeah, 3DS maybe.
So, Jeff Cannata, I'm really curious to – I don't know as much about your background in terms of gaming. I know you're like a big PC gamer from back in the day, but mm-hmm. how much were you following Nintendo during this kind of transition between N64 and GameCube, and what were your expectations or hopes for the new system at that time?
Oh, I was following them very, very closely. I mean, I wasn't in games coverage at that point. Mm-hmm. I was just moved to LA at that time, but my roommate and I had a GameCube, and we were thrilled with it. It was tradition. I mean, we'd played N64. I actually played the majority of the N64 games. I played on an emulator on my PC,
yeah.
Which might not be a good thing to say, but in my dorm room, that's the only way I could do it. And so we got a GameCube and we were excited, and I'm sure we're going to get into all the fantastic games on the system. But I was thrilled when it got announced and loved. I liked the design. I liked the look and the size and the sort of cute, compact nature of the form factor, but I know other people had other ideas about it, but I was into it, man. I love the GameCube and I love the controller. Yeah, I was all over it.
Before it came out, I was just praying to hardcore video gaming Jesus that it was going to have a handle, because every game console needs a handle, and Nintendo delivered big time on that one.
Yeah, there were too few handle consoles at that point.
It's a weird one with the design and everything, because everybody points to the GameCube as being one of the most sort of notable examples of Nintendo, you know, are playing too much into their image of being child friendly, because you had the handle, but also the controller, like with the big central button, and the color scheme was still a bit Fisher Price and all that kind of stuff. And the weird thing about that is that, you know, obviously we think of Nintendo currently as being very family friendly. We think of Nintendo in the 80s, you know, with the Zapper and Rob and all that being super focused on kids. But if you look at where they succeeded on the N64, obviously it was a lot of that, but they were also the home of the console first-person shooter. They had a lot of games on that did well, that were full of gore and shooting and all that. People played them in dorm rooms and all that. And I guess that's one of the things about GameCube, is that in many ways they completely seeded that sector of the market.
to Microsoft.
Well, it was the analog stick that made all those first-person shooters possible. If it hadn't been for that one innovation, it just wouldn't have happened until somebody else had figured that out. Right?
And they lost that advantage in the next round because everybody copied it.
In fact, you could argue, because some people really didn't like the C stick or the sort of less symmetrical kind of design of the controller, that in fact they lost that. They very much went completely the other way. That comparative advantage that they had was totally lost. And in fact, in many ways, it's difficult to identify what the GameCube's comparative advantage was compared to, with the N64. It was a console built from the ground up for true 3D movement, 3D worlds, and for four-player local multiplayer. And then with Wii, you've got motion controls. These are things that the other consoles were not, at the time, were not built around. But what was the GameCube built around in any of your minds?
I have a question. At the time, and you guys covering it, what was your reaction to the mini disc?
Not thrilled, honestly.
Yeah, I was pretty taken back by it because, every other console was planned to be able to play DVDs. And, for a lot, nowadays it doesn't really matter. But back then it was like, that was kind of a big deal. A lot of people bought PS2s for the sole fact that it was a DVD player. And
I did. Yep.
It was the same price as, not all, it was the same price as a normal DVD player that you'd pick up at a shop, but it was also a PlayStation.
My understanding is that was left off because Nintendo did not want to pay the royalty fees.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Well, just even with Wii that applied, even though when they were using DVD port, they were still just sort of penny pinching. But of course, at that point, it wasn't so meaningful because DVD players had become totally ubiquitous. The timing is very crucial there because it wasn't like with Blu-ray and PS3 where Blu-ray hadn't really been popularized so much when PS3, obviously Sony were trying to popularize it with PS3, whereas PS2 was just that perfect kind of intersection where DVD's going on the sort of rising by itself, and then PS2 is just going to blow it wide open. But and then so Nintendo not being part of that was a problem, I think. But of course, it was kind of in a sense it could all fit into this whole thing. They were very strong in their rhetoric about this is a gaming system made by a company that knows games. That's what we're not a tech company. We're not Microsoft, right? You've just come in after Sega's demise. We're not Sony, the big multimedia giant. We know games. We make games. It's all about games.
Nintendo has never cared one iota about advancing technology in any way, shape, or form. They will come up with, and I hate to use the phrase gimmick because I think it's a little unfair, but they will come up with something that makes gameplay unique on their system. And they will build the entire system around that. With the N64, it was the analog stick, and I'm not even entirely sure if Nintendo was aware at what that was going to do for gaming going forward. And that's why when they launched the GameCube, it felt like the GameCube was the one machine that never had that.
Yeah, that's my point earlier on. I mean, what would you say it was? Analog shoulder buttons?
The handle. I think it was the handle. I think, and I'm okay, you guys think I'm being facetious, but I'm not. I think the handle was the thing that Nintendo thought was going to propel this. This is the game system that you can easily take over to your friend's house, plug right in, and be ready to go, and have your little gaming parties and stuff like that. I have another.
But it doesn't fit your formula. It doesn't fit your formula of
not at all.
Building around the game is being built around that new functionality.
That Microsoft actually tried adding a handle to the Xbox, and after several testers dislocated their shoulders, they had to drop it.
Nintendo was all about playing community games with your friends. I mean,
local multiplayer party games. That's apart from some of the things on N64 that were particularly strong. Maybe like shooters fell into this category to some extent. But that was a huge thing that happened on the N64. And of course, GameCube, maintained that. Whereas I mean, PS2, don't forget, correct me if it still didn't have four controller ports.
No, it never did.
That's just bizarre to my mind. So they still had that kind of advantage. But in terms of how those games had a kind of special kind of hook to them anymore, they didn't. I mean, and that parity kind of, it was a bit of a double-edged sword. Obviously, on the one hand, what was like the special hook for the consumer with Nintendo anymore? Pretty much just the Nintendo brand. I mean, they explicitly did that. They just got up there and said, it's the Nintendo difference. That was their line. It's just like, it's different because we made it, basically.
Well, One thing I like about GameCube is that even though it didn't really have a lot of technology innovations compared to its competitors, I think what that allowed Nintendo to do was really focus on making the games different from the previous generation, you know, in a non-forced way. And so they really kind of went outside the box, and they actually, if you remember, GameCube era was the last time they really created a lot of new franchises. Unless you consider Wii as a franchise in terms of like Wii Sports, Wii Music, et cetera. Yeah. But the GameCube era had, you know, Pikmin and Eternal Darkness and Animal Crossing and, well, not Smash Brothers, but almost. And it was really a time when they were trying to introduce a lot of new properties and develop new characters. And I don't think we've seen that nearly as much since then. I think it's partly because they've gotten sidetracked into learning to exploit these new technologies and trying to build, you know, kind of different kinds of play experiences. Whereas there's something to be said for having the limits of, you know, we have to make it on essentially the same kind of platform as we had last generation. So now we have to force ourselves to be different and innovate within that box.
It's an interesting point there, because if you look at it, if you look at some of the series that they'd established, you know, on N64 and whatnot, you know, they farmed those out. Like Wave Race went to Nintendo Software Technologies. Star Fox, of course, was internally developed for the N64, but then Star Fox Assault was given to Namco as part of the Triforce thing, along with F-Zero GX to Sega, and that had mixed results. You know, but F-Zero GX is wonderful. People generally don't have so many good things to say about something like Star Fox Assault, but, you know, that left them to develop internally something like Pikmin or Luigi's Mansion or some of these games that populated the early kind of running with it. I mean, do you think...
And then also they drastically rejiggered some of their well-known franchises like Zelda and Mario. So they said, even if we keep the same characters, we're going to try to take them in a different direction and do something that our fans haven't seen before. And it was exciting. On a hardware level, GameCube may not be the most exciting or the most memorable system. I think on a software side it is, and I think those two things are linked together.
But I think people forget that at the time, so many people were suggesting that Nintendo would do themselves a service by getting out of the hardware business, and that, you know, the N64 did not do as well as I'm sure they had hoped, and the GameCube, they were a distant third place, and it was suggested often that, you know, maybe they should just be a software designer.
Well, I think it was topical at the time because, of course, Sega... You know, we're just had done just so, bowing yeah. out. Yeah. So people thought that. Of course, a common topic on our show is how different Nintendo are from Sega back then. And even
you have to keep in mind, GameCube sold almost as many units worldwide as Xbox. It was not as successful as Xbox in North America. But if you take a broader view, they were really very neck and neck for the entire generation. And at the end of the day, Nintendo sold about 35 million GameCubes. Sega would have loved to sell that many Dreamcasts. They weren't on track to come even close to it, which is why they shut the platform down. But Nintendo was never doing badly with GameCube.
No, it was just cool to hate on it. That's all.
Right. I think some of it was, you know, the image, you know, problem that they had. I mean, that would be one thing I'd be interested to hear Jeff Callard talk about. You know, I mean, how Nintendo planned to sort of manage its image. You know, I mean, they obviously, you know, it was a great base for them, the younger market, and I'm sure that was probably, you know, the game probably helped keep the GameCube going in a lot of respects, especially when they got down to like $99 or whatever by 2003. I mean, it was very affordable. But did they ever feel like they, you know, they were losing their grip on their own image and that people were kind of caricaturing them?
Well, there was frustration. Internally, no. Internally, it was all about, the lifeblood of the system was first party, right? It was our own stuff. It was stuff that we had created in-house. And I kind of want to touch on something that I think was one understated. Personally, I believe the GameCube failed because of the controller. When the controller came out, I remember sitting in meetings and with NCL, and at the end of the meeting, the summary was, okay, we understand you don't like the controller. Because if you remember, the PS2 had the DualShock. And then the Xbox, although it was an oversized controller at the time, it did offer new stuff in terms of, like, it had its connectivity, right? It had its LAN abilities and things. So it had some really unique stuff. No third party was making a game for the GameCube because it was so hard to get their games to work on that controller. And so there was very limited. Like, if you were going to play a Madden game, you were not buying the GameCube version. It's just it was too hard to play with the way the different.
Yeah, I mean, I had the first Madden. I mean, it played okay, you know, and I only had a GameCube, so you know. But I can understand that, you know, that point of view. It wasn't ideally suited.
Yeah, so I think its image is a direct result of the fact that all of its flagship titles were first party Nintendo titles, of which they are Mario, they are Zelda, they are Luigi, they are Pikmin, which. Brightly colored, easily accessible, well, not necessarily children, family friendly.
There's also Star Wars.
Let's not forget Metroid Prime.
Yeah, exactly.
But also, a decade.
And don't forget, yeah. Nintendo were really proactive, I think, in this generation in a way they weren't. You know, in the N64, they had the Dream Team, where they took you to something we covered recently, our 64 show. You know, there was almost a point of pride. We've got hardly anyone working for the machine. It's that good. You know, like, you know, once you got to GameCube, like, they were going out there and seeking people out to make games that, you know, they brokered the deal for Twin Snakes, you know, do Silicon Knights and Konami together. And then, you know, Eternal Darkness is a case of a game that's more mature that they brought through to the GameCube eventually. You know, I mean, then of course there's the Capcom situation, getting Resident Evil on the platform. They sort, you know, I mean, they didn't do any of that stuff on N64, courting Japanese developers like that.
The problem is because no third party was making games for the system, they had to go out,
right, exactly,
to make it happen. So, it should have been effortless, and instead it was a huge effort.
But do you think because Xbox, you know, Microsoft was doing the same, was already ahead of the curve. So was Sony, where they had their console third-party exclusives, and Nintendo really didn't have too many at that point. And that's, you know, it was actually good that you saw them go out and, you know, nab the Capcom 5 or work with Konami to get Metal Gear over on the platform too. So
one of my favorite third-party games of that whole generation is Beautiful Joe.
Oh, there you go.
Love you just that made game. Carl so sad that he's not on this segment. It's his like game of all time.
That was on my top 10. We did the site did a top 10 for the GameCube's anniversary, and it's easily one of my favorite GameCube games.
But you know, it's games like that that made people, you know, stop saying, "Oh, it's the kiddie system." It's this game is really awesome. This is why I'm playing it. Or RE4 shows up and like everybody shuts up about the fact that it's the kiddie system. It's awesome. You know,
that's an interesting point though, Billy. I mean, do you think if RE4, and obviously it couldn't, otherwise it might have done, but if it could have come out 3 years earlier, could that have been a game changer in terms of the perceptions?
I think it would have helped a lot. You know, I mean, you know, you towards the end of the life cycle of the GameCube, the really, really good games were few and far between, you know, and it took games like, you know, Beautiful Joe or RE4 or, you know, to get people to come back to it, you know.
Greg, to get to your question, though, there was a game similar to RE4 in terms of tone that did come out 3 years earlier called Eternal Darkness.
There we go.
It's a great game, too.
I know Rick is a huge fan of Eternal Darkness, and Jeff worked on the game. So Jeff, I know this was a topic that we wanted to get over, but the transition from N64 to GameCube, I played Eternal Darkness on N64 at E3.
So
and
did I
talked to Dennis Dyack about it, and I covered it extensively, and I was really excited about it. I was a little disappointed when it got delayed because it meant we were going to have to wait like an extra, at the time they said 1 year, it turned out to be more like a year and a half. And Dennis told me that, you know, the story's not changing, we're not adding new levels, et cetera. It's going to be the same game, we'll just have better technology. So I'm really curious to hear your side of the story on, you know, aside from the obvious market gamble of maybe we can sell more copies of this on the new system since this old one is kind of dying off. Were there creative reasons for putting it on the new system? Did you think there was a really strong case for doing that?
Oh, yeah. So the N64 version was almost done. You could play all the way to Alex in the city at the end. You couldn't do the final battle, and it was buggy as hell. But
this ROM needs to appear.
I had it at my desk until they physically came down and took it from me because they were collecting every N64 ROM left in the building.
Those bastards.
So we were close. So it was a couple issues. It was really one of the most technically advanced N64 games at the time, we were doing a lot of things that cartridge technology was not doing, including full voice. Mm-hmm. And when we did the math, it was going to end up being the biggest memory cart ever produced.
Really?
Yeah, it was. I can't remember the exact number. I want to say we were going to have to use the 512 meg cart.
Holy shit.
That was only used once.
Yes, and it's super expensive, and it really cuts down on your margins. They're really hard to produce. And, of course, Nintendo was also the producer of the cartridges.
Hey, Jeff, I seem to remember you and I having had a conversation about it at the time, and the determination was made that if that 512 meg cart was going to have to be used, they were going to have to price that game to the point where they were terrified it just simply wasn't going to sell.
Yeah,
it was going to have to be, you know, a $70 game.
Yeah, it was going to be an expensive game, it was going to be a new franchise, and it was going to be the end of a life cycle. So we sat down and had several meetings and did, you know, all those stupid little ROI projections and craziness. And, you know, unfortunately, I wish we could have hit launch much closer, but a franchise's success is so much higher when it launches at the beginning of a life cycle. Mm. And with the technical – With how much was going in, you know, we wanted to make sure there was full voice acting, how big the game was, along with being a new franchise, the cost of production on a disc, even though they're proprietary discs, much lower. We just decided to make that jump. And unfortunately, we didn't get it out quite as close to launch as we wanted, but I think it ended up being it was definitely a better game. I mean, I've played both versions. I'm one of the few that has. the GameCube version was by far superior in terms of play control and things like that. But
I remember playing Eternal Darkness and on GameCube when the final version, and just thinking this is really going to change the fortune of the system because it was so good and it was so mature. I mean, really mature, you know. And I just thought there's no – I mean, if people play this game, then they will take GameCube seriously. And then it felt like there was a pretty big gap for that kind of game, you know, for a game shooting for the more grown-up, mature demographic until RE4 came out. I mean, there were a lot of good games that came out in between those two, but really nothing that served that market. And in the meantime, there was a ton of stuff, especially on PS2, that did serve that market. And – you know, by the time RE4 came out, it felt like kind of a dying breath. An amazing one. I mean, one of my favorite games ever, but, you know, it really felt like too late.
Eternal Darkness represents a style of development that Nintendo is not familiar with or comfortable with.
Well, it's true. They didn't market it. I think the only ads that ever appeared for Eternal Darkness, I think, were in Playboy.
No, there was a TV ad that involved
There was a TV ad. Yeah.
Was there a campfire involved?
We did a couple weird promotions, but mostly it came down to development cycle and design philosophy. Because we had several meetings with EAD. Even back then, they were already shifting towards ease of playability. I mean, a lot of the philosophy of the Wii Sports type stuff was already really taking a firm root. And giant epic story games were not something they wanted to continue to pursue.
So Dennis was right when he talked about that stuff. I mean,
oh yeah,
we did a lot of interviews. I've known Dennis for over a decade, and when we were talking to him right after they split from Nintendo, he said the real problem was that Nintendo wasn't interested in making the kinds of games that Silicon Knights made, and I thought it was a very artful dodge of the real problems behind the scenes. But what you're saying sounds like he was really, I mean, that's
totally accurate. Completely accurate. And I mean, you know, and it's not like a unified decision, right? A lot of it was driven from Japan. And yes, there was a few at NOA as well, but and there was a few of us at NOA that wished we could have continued to work on those kind of epic story, deep games. Unfortunately, it's just, you know, those with the purse strings wanted to go a different direction. And you can't say they went in the wrong direction. It was just a different one than everyone else was going in.
You know, Jeff, I have to give you so much credit for how exquisite that game turned out, and I can't overstate possibly.
Nights really.
To be fair though, I mean you helped shepherd that game and you know helped give them a lot of the feedback that was coming from Nintendo and Miyamoto-san to a degree. If you notice though, ever since Silicon Knights has left, they haven't really had anything that's been quite of that caliber.
That's an interesting
have you segue. Played X-Men? I mean, have you?
I know.
It's an interesting segue to a point in this era that we have to talk about, really, which is the sale of Rare. This was a pretty seismic kind of event. I think most people who are fans of the N64, Rare games were off pretty much a staple. In their gaming diet, they were huge. Really, people remember the delays, but they were also really prolific during that time and produced a lot of games to fill out that library. And then, of course, you get to, less than a year in, just about the time that Star Fox Adventures was coming out, and Nintendo sell the company to Microsoft. I mean, does anyone here have any really kind of powerful memories of what they felt that meant for the console, what direction it was going?
I was worried when it happened. I mean,
really?
Star Fox Adventures was not their greatest effort, but...
Oh, first shading, though. Come on.
See, there were a lot of people that... I remember when that announcement... I think I actually wrote the story on the site when, Microsoft purchased Rare, and, everybody was freaking out. I know the forums, everybody was basically shitting their pants, and I'm like, why? Why? They haven't made a really, really good game. I mean, this myself personally, but as far as I was concerned, outside of Blast Corps...
There it is.
And GoldenEye, they didn't.
Billy, Perfect Dark came out in 2000. That was not that long before the sale happened. It's
2 years. Yeah.
And
2 years. Okay.
15 frames per second of multiplayer is not very good. I'm sorry. That quality wasn't good. And then you had the Rare collectathons, which I was not a Banjo guy. I know some people really liked it, but I just thought it was a Mario knockoff that you collected more shit. And Donkey Kong 64 was a turd. So, I mean. Hey,
thank you for saying what I can't, Bill.
And I was like, fuck yeah, and Nintendo did a great, that was a sweet deal. I mean, what the hell is Microsoft doing?
I still think Blast Corps actually is the best game Rare ever produced, and I'm so unbelievably ticked that we never got a sequel to it, or at least had it ported to other consoles so that I could play it again.
Star Fox Adventures was a fucking travesty, and I mean... Who knows, really Donkey Kong Race? I mean, it just, for me...
I enjoyed Star Fox Adventures. I may be the only one, but I did. I enjoyed it.
I thought it was a beautiful turd.
It was. I mean, it was a beautiful furry turd. But, I was ready. My impression of Rare was that they would take a Nintendo idea and make it a lot more beautiful. Visually and graphically, Rare has chops. It's well known. They've shown it throughout the years. But as far as gameplay design, I didn't think Banjo-Kazooie. I was a Mario guy. I didn't think Banjo was any better. I didn't want to collect 18 different fucking things. And that's the same thing with Donkey Kong 64. It was a giant collectathon. That's how they rooted their, their lengthening of gameplay. So
yeah,
for
but
me,
they also
I was
pretty
like,
much invented the third person shooter genre with Jet Force Gemini, which is an amazing game. And I tell you right now, we would not have Resident Evil 4 or Gears of War without that game.
Potential.
Much less Ratchet and Clank, which is almost a complete ripoff.
I did not.
Yeah, I mean, when I looked, I never bought Star Fox Adventures. I read the reviews. Having played some Rare games, which I liked, but there were things about them I didn't like. It sounded like it was the bad Rare, if you know what I mean, coming through a bit with the bad Rex Grossman or something popping.
Rare's problem has never been on vision or technology. It's always been on execution. It's always getting past that 80% mark. If you notice, the only thing they're doing now is I think they developed the Avatar technology, the Xbox.
Kinect Sports, right?
Yeah, they're doing Kinect Sports.
Conker's Bad Fur Day
was fun. That was cute.
Yeah. I mean, that was pretty.
And having a bar in the Nintendo booth at E3 was fucking awesome. Especially
that was their greatest achievement.
That was my first.
I was too
E3.
Young to drink a beer when I went to that bar, but I got a mug, and then I met Miyamoto on the way out.
for me at the time, I think my concern almost, you know, not I had been looking forward to see what they could do on GameCube. It's just a natural extension. You know, you think about what's the next perfect arc going to be. And to some extent, you got that satisfied with Time Splitters 2, you know, which was, pretty good. With your Free Radical, who splintered off from Rare, of course, did that. But, you know,
Perfect Dark was on the 360. That turned out,
Yeah, well, that's the point. That was the original segue. Is what have they done since outside of Nintendo? And it's not a lot of merit. But at the time, I was worried that what this would mean for exclusive software of the system just to make it a success. You know, and if whether or not they're games I personally want to play, you need exclusives to make it a success, and then there will be more games that I want to play because it's a successful system. And I think that's some of the other part of the reason why they went around Nintendo and courted these other developers, because there was a shortfall there. Now, you know, you think of the N64, compared to to lose Rare's propping up of the software library was not insignificant at all, and so it kind of forced them into that role of seeking out people to make these games that would draw people in. And I mean, there were some multi-platform games that were, you think of Ubisoft, Prince of Persia, stuff like that. I mean, I think it was still better than the N64 for multi-platform.
Soul Calibur 2 was a really
Soul Calibur 2, which it sold the best with Lincoln, and then Sony threw the money hats to make 3 happen just for PS2, I guess. But that was the kind of story. PS2 was so dominant and Sony had so much money that in the end, even when they sold the most of something, what could they do? That was just how powerful Sony were at that time.
Well, and I think
Nintendo at the time that the Rare thing went down, they started funding their own, what they hoped was a similar situation with Retro. And
yeah.
So, I mean, Retro didn't have the best start. But
games cancelled left and right. I mean, I remember. I mean, I was so worried. I was so worried about Metroid Prime. Metroid Prime is one of the weird. So many of the games that you think of as being your favorite games ever, chances were you were super excited for that game beforehand, and you had every confidence it was going to be great. Mm-hmm. Metroid Prime, not so.
I mean, Metroid Prime, I knew was going to look fantastic, because I actually was fortunate enough to have worked with Todd Keller, who ended up being their design god over there, overseeing the kind of the look of Metroid Prime. So I knew that was going to be in good hands. But the rest of it, I mean, you just keep hearing these horror stories about the game and about the fights between them and Miyamoto coming out of Austin, and it was terrifying to listen to.
Yeah,
they had an entire basic shakeup. I mean, I remember sitting at a Dolphin dev kit, and playing the Retro NFL game, the Retro Car Combat game, the Retro RPG game, and realizing they were all horrible.
Yeah, I ended up meeting some people that moved over to 2K that worked on that football game, and I heard some pretty interesting stories on that. Like,
the only thing they had done were the menus.
Yeah, I mean, went with the GameCube. Like, there was six. They had 5 or 6 titles in development, and they one by one would just drop, and like, and that was like half the GameCube sizzle reel when they announced the GameCube. You know,
I mean, that's the thing that was worrying though for me as well, just as a consumer on the outside, was like, I'm hearing about this, I shouldn't be. Like, it must be fucking bad. If you've got EGM on the cover, it was like the Emperor coming to the Death Star. It's like, you should not be hearing about this with a company as secretive in its culture as Nintendo. It really
Then it was the stories coming out and the pictures and, talk of these naked hot tub parties coming out of there and stuff like that. You're realizing, wait a minute, is anybody actually sitting at a computer working on any of these games? Is anybody doing anything other than getting drunk all the time? I mean, what is going on?
But I also think it's a difference too, like communication wise, because a lot of the barriers from developers to the audience were shaken up a lot more because of the internet. I mean, back in the day, for N64, I mean, sure, the internet was just starting, but like, now you have forums, now you have message boards, you have people, sharing a lot more details. Instead of waiting for the monthly magazines, there's new shit every day. And I think a lot of things really, really changed for video game companies. And especially now, it's even changing even more. I mean, people are interacting directly with developers on Facebook and Twitter,
Yeah, I think one of the big problems for GameCube that made it hard for it to capture the same market that it might have had, that Nintendo had in earlier generations, and especially that led them to lose a lot of market share to Sony, is that they didn't really have a strong RPG showing, and it was a carryover from N64 where they had virtually none. And so they were starting from a place of extreme weakness in that generation. And by the end of the generation, you could argue there are a few pretty good RPGs for GameCube, but still a pretty small number when you compare it to PlayStation 2. And in Japan, that makes a big difference. Now, GameCube did okay in Japan, but not nearly as well as it could have. And I mean, it was completely dwarfed by PS2, and I think primarily for that reason. And it gets back to the fact that Nintendo didn't really have the capability or the know-how to lead in that genre. So they really depended on other people, and those people were long gone in terms of third parties.
You know, you mentioned something really interesting there, Johnny, when you're talking about Nintendo's ability to lead. And I think Billy touched on this a bit too when he was talking about, you know, kind of not seeing the internet coming a little bit and you know, the changes that was going to have, and not just the way that, you know, fans interact with these companies and these developers, but just, you know, the way the consoles communicate. I mean, we could talk all day long, I think, about, you know, the places where Nintendo just, you know, didn't see technology coming and didn't, you know, we talked a little bit about how they've never really taken a leadership position in saying, you know, we're going to do this first and we're going to push the technology envelope. But at the same time, I mean, even keeping a feature parity so that things like what happened with the GameCube didn't happen, where having two less buttons on your controller means they can't port games over. They just, you know, there was this myopia there, and I'm not entirely sure if it was, you know, intentional, if it was deliberate, or if it was just them not knowing how to take that leadership position. I think we've seen it with every console they've brought out so far, that they'll have some sort of feature that they build the console around, but, you know, they don't really know how to say, okay, let's go ahead and you know, we'll add a little bit of cost to this chip to be able to get higher res graphics out of it, and
right.
You know, let people develop for us first. Let us, our machine, be the target console that that everybody else has to port away from when they want to build for other stuff. Nintendo's never been in that position.
So I've there's a story I have never told in public. I've only
this isn't public. Go ahead.
Yeah, this isn't. So we got a pitch meeting from a developer. So at the time, Counter-Strike was huge, and Counter-Strike was kind of driving a lot of online gaming on the PC side of things.
You could probably argue Counter-Strike is still huge.
Yeah, exactly.
It is.
So we got a pitch from a developer, a Swedish developer, that had this new kind of squad-based army battle game. It's a little company called DICE. Mm-hmm. And they came to Nintendo, and they showed us Battlefield.
Holy shit.
And we loved it. I, for a long time, talk about keeping the ROM, I kept the disc they left with me because we were huge Counter-Strike fans, the people, and we were blown away. We're like, this is going to be huge. We could not do anything with it, Nintendo, because there was no online strategy. Nobody, anytime anyone tried to talk about online, it wasn't happening, and this is a perfect example. Nintendo could have had Battlefield as an exclusive title, but because they had no way, I mean, they would have turned it into a first-person adventure war game. You know,
do you have any sense of why that is? Do you have any sense of what the resistance was?
I think a lot of it was just the
Japan.
People, yeah, it was the people making the decisions are so focused on their games that it's unless they're creating the technology to support their gameplay, they just didn't. I mean, you even see it now. They're still playing catch up when it comes to online communication.
Yeah, well, they still don't have an online strategy, so not much.
No, but the difference is now they've got their own, you know, their own skew on the industry. You know, the problem with GameCube was it was just these weird half measures. It's like on the one hand we've got a system that's easier to develop for, you know, it's not esoteric like the N64, but on the other hand you've got a controller that limits your ability to port games. So you know what, you haven't got as many multi-platform games as you should do, and you know, they didn't. they had the broadband adapter, you know, PSO was, you know, you had stuff like, but in the it wasn't a serious online strategy. And of course, that's why they lost, you know, all that kind of first person sector that they put, you know, the console market that was sort of fledgling in the N64 era that maybe with the right moves, you know, they could have held on to or expanded. You know, they just pretty much gave it to Microsoft. I mean, Microsoft would have wanted to take it either way. With, you know, the way their kind of focus was, but it was pretty much, you know, they could just do it unfettered, really.
Well, here's what's interesting. It's not like the hardware capability wasn't there, but Nintendo would never actually turn it over to somebody to say, go ahead and build on this, or give them the specs on how to use it, or, you know, take a leadership position and create something like their own version of Xbox Live. They put it in there almost so they could check a box on the back of the box, say, yeah, we've got, you know, network connectivity, and let it sit there and languish. And actually, I think
remember that sounds like a great segue to connectivity with the Game Boy.
Tell them we want connectivity, and what did they give us?
Rick, exactly what you said, because I mean, when they announced the GameCube at Space World, like, they were going down the checklist. They talked about Bluetooth, they had SD card stuff. They, you know, they showed a modem adapter and a broadband adapter, and they went down the entire checklist, which, like, at announcement, that's like, fuck yeah, that's what everybody wants. But then it's like, yeah, we checked the box, but if we're actually going to do it, I mean, hell, the broadband adapter was mainly used for frickin' LAN games, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, like,
but also,
like, it, around, I remember racing Double Dash online through my broadband adapter over
right.
Pipe. Which was,
I mean, call it double lag, because it was
brutal. It was really bad.
Yeah, but I mean, that was used for, like, Phantasy Star, I think Kirby's Air Ride, and Mario Kart for
the other thing. I mean, in terms of, like, something like online, whatever feature it might be, you know, it seems to be, especially on Nintendo platform, it's one thing having the facility there and then just say, well, if you want to use it, use it. But on the Nintendo platform, unless Nintendo kind of demonstrates that it can work on their system, in their ecosystem, you know, other people are just going to shy away from it. You see that with Motion Plus now. You know, because Nintendo, obviously the Wii Sports Resort was huge, because they didn't really follow up on that, you've not got a lot of people, you know, jumping in with both feet and say, let's make Wii Motion Plus games. You know, it seems like Nintendo always has to do the trailblazing on their own system.
But that's what's really fascinating about the whole thing, is that Nintendo will come up with this thing, like with the N64, it was the analog stick. They will have lightning in a bottle. They will have the best possible, you know, feature that's going to capture people's imaginations and make them want to develop for that and not know how to exploit it, which is how, you know, the GameCube controller ends up happening. When they, you know, they had the device with the N64 and then completely botched it going forward. It's the same sort of thing. They have these things available to them, but they don't really know what it is that's attracting people to the console when it does work, so they don't know how to exploit it going forward.
But I think what the lessons they drew from GameCube principally, you know, wasn't that, well, we were close to getting on parity with some of the other systems, but we made some decisions that meant that we were still out of step. It was, let's be more different. And of course, that was, you know, a hugely successful decision on their part, you know, to completely sidestep the arms race, to go to motion control, etc. So, you know, there's kind of a fork in the road there, which GameCube found itself in the middle of, you know, and they went decisively in the unique direction in, you know, making use out of modest technology in a different way, which has always been their strong suit. So they were really just reverting to type, I would say. The GameCube was where they sort of flirted with doing something else and kind of, you know, doing something more orthodox and kind of failed at it in many ways. But I did want to talk about some of our favorite games before we wrap up the hour. So just to a bit of context here, we do have the 10th anniversary feature, very many features. We've got a whole sort of event page for it. If you go to the site, at the top there you should see a picture of Billy's cat Louie looking up at the camera somewhere. If you click on that, that'll take you to all our that'll take you to all our GameCube 10th anniversary stuff. But kind of the cornerstone of it is our 10 games. So I'll just list them off here for people who haven't already seen them, and then see if people want to really have strong feelings about adding something. So Super Smash Bros. Melee, of course, the best-selling game on the system. Legend of Zelda Wind Waker, Metroid Prime, Resident Evil 4, the original Pikmin, I believe Pit beat its sequel.
It is the superior Pikmin.
Rogue Squadron 2, Super Monkey Ball, Animal Crossing, Super Mario Sunshine, and Soul Calibur 2. That's the Word. 10. So anyone feels an egregious omission there?
I've got dibs on Zelda.
I think probably the most controversial one on there is not even Pikmin over Pikmin 2, but a lot of people seem to shit on Super Mario Sunshine, and I think that game gets a lot more hate than it deserves. Because
the only Mario I didn't play. The only Mario I haven't played.
Oh, if you've never played it, you absolutely have to play it. If you like Mario, you have to play it. Really. Mm-hmm. Because I think the problem is this. I mean, it was the first Mario game we'd had since 64. And it just wasn't what people were expecting. And I think some of the design changes that Nintendo made were really clever. And some of them weren't fully fleshed out. And the interesting thing about it to me is that it's probably the first Mario game I can think of that had like really obvious flaws, you know, and I think that really threw people off. They're like, wow, Nintendo's really off their game. They're going downhill. This is just not it's not the level of polish that I expect in a Mario game. And I can't argue with that. That game has flaws. I mean, it has technical flaws. It has a couple of design flaws. And yet I think when it works, the things that it does so well. There are moments of very intense joy in Mario Sunshine that you can't get in any other game.
But well, I would say that the game's biggest problem was the fact that it was hard as fuck. Like, I loved the challenges, especially the acapella worlds or whatever when you didn't have the jetpack. Like, but you know, that game expected it. The learning curve went so high, so fast that it was like right after you got the 120th star in Mario 64, then you started this game. You know what I mean? Like, it just got crazy. Like,
but go back to what Johnny said about it not being polished. So I think there's a bit of a common thread of some of Nintendo's games, especially that early GameCube period, because it seemed like one of the responses it has to the N64 was too many. Many delays. We created droughts for ourselves with these delays, and you know, keep people hanging for so again. We've got to come out strong. You know, we're not you're not coming from a strong market position this time. We've got to get this stuff out on time and you know, get a strong lineup going. But I think what you saw was stuff like your Sunshine was rough around the edges. It clearly was massively padded to get to the sacred number of 120.
The blame there gets laid on Miyamoto's doorstep because you know Miyamoto, all the ideas. Ideas for his games come from stuff he's doing around the house and playing with his dogs and you know out in his flower bed and stuff like that. This one, he was clearly out there washing his car, and he said, "Hey, I can make a game out of that."
He probably doesn't own a car; he's Japanese.
The blue coins and all that. Because and then Zelda, I mean, Wind Waker is fantastic game, but it's obviously flawed in a way that other Zelda games generally aren't. You know, the obvious cutout of a dungeon, the Triforce quest, all this kind of stuff. It's because they were just like, you know, whereas in the N64 era, there was okay, it's not ready yet. Let's take a bit more time. You know, maybe we saw it Sunshine. Maybe they would have changed the difficulty curve a bit. I thought maybe you know, but in this case, in this era, they would really felt like the stuff like Pikmin, Luigi's Mansion. They were very short games. You know, but it's like, they were explicit in their rhetoric. Like, it doesn't have to be some epic to be a game worth playing. You know, and all that kind of stuff. So it just showed their new approach. And I mean, there was good things about it. I mean, when I got the GameCube. I was playing an amount of games in that. I got it a few weeks after it came out in North America. And, I mean, I had tons of games to play. I had Rogue Leader and Smash Bros. Melee with it. A friend lent me Monkey Ball and Wave Race. And then my family brought back for me on a North American vacation Luigi's Mansion and Pikmin. So it's just nice. And Madden as well. So, I mean, you know, could you? What other launch would you have that many launch window? Would you have that many games to play? I mean, that was the good side of it.
So, has everyone here played Rogue Squadron 2, Rogue Leader?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. That game is. I haven't played it in years, and I've been meaning for a long time to go back to it. But I can tell you right now, if I went back and played it, number one, it looks better than almost any Wii game that's ever been released. And that's a GameCube launch game. And that game was eye-popping when it first came out. I could not believe this was running on my little GameCube. Unbelievable. Number two, just the music is so good. so fantastic. And the game is really fun, very challenging, very demanding, but really fun and well-designed with spectacular missions. I mean, that mission where you take down a Death Star is just jaw-dropping. Yep. And I don't know that I've played any kind of Star Wars or flight game since then that really brought that level of, you know, impressive scenery, and the things that you were doing are so incredible. And I mean, much more than rare, I really weep for Factor 5, because those guys were incredibly promising at the start of that generation, and they, two games later, they don't exist.
Word. Yeah.
That's true. And if you remember, we actually beat that game at the Cube Clubs before the game even came out. In the one in Minnesota, we all camped out there and just kept playing through it. And the guy, the Team Nintendo guy, just let us keep playing. And so we beat the game and showed that Darth Vader was actually in the game. And, like, I think Factor 5 got pissed at us, or Nintendo got pissed at us. We had a picture or something like that. I don't know. Not that we never pissed off.
No. Billy, you and Rick and I pissed off Nintendo and a lot of developers back in those days. We leaked so much stuff.
Hey, they told us stuff, so whatever. Yeah. And we didn't. The cat did it, and you can't really see.
There
it.
You go.
So, yeah.
You know, while we still got a couple minutes here, I wanted to jump into Wind Waker, since I think Greg mentioned it earlier. But I think Zelda Wind Waker was everything that was right and wrong with Nintendo all at the same time. I thought the general game design and the use of the baton and whatnot, I thought it was excellent. I thought the wind mechanics were great. Mm-hmm. I even really loved the look of it, and I know a lot of people didn't. And I think that right there kind of shows you the issues Nintendo has with understanding what their fans want and what they're willing to give them. I still think it was the right decision, and as much as people hate on Chibi Link, I still think it was the absolute right decision for the game at the time.
I don't think anybody hates that anymore. I think initially
some of it was just the bait and switch aspect, because I had the teaser video with the Smash Brothers models fighting each other, Link and Ganondorf, and then it's like, oh no, now he looks like, there it looks like Powerpuff Girls, and that was a shock.
And the first screenshot, or the first picture off the screen that came out of Space World, looked like shit, and when I remember coming back to the hotel after that press conference, everybody was like, oh my God, it looks terrible. I'm like, no, it looks really, really good in motion. When you see one, you know, it's kind of like the NeoGAF syndrome, when it's like one screenshot and everybody shits themselves. Like, it's no.
Well, I remember the video that you shot and we posted, and I watched it 100 times, and I was really disturbed by it. And if you go back and watch that initial launch video from Space World 2001, or was it 2000? It must have been
2001.
2000 is the one with the Smash Brothers people.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right, because it came out in early 03 in the West. Correct. Yeah. So anyway, if you go back and watch that, I think what you'll find is it does not present the Wind Waker graphical style in the light that you remember it. When you think of Wind Waker, you think of being outside in the sunlight, in the ocean, on the water, with the wind blowing through, and it's bright and colorful and smooth. And the launch trailer that they showed was in a dungeon. It was from that stealth part of the game early on.
Forsaken Fortress.
Right.
It's very dark and lots of shadows, and Link is sneaking around monsters. It didn't look like Zelda. And when I saw the game at E3 the next year in 2002, I thought, wow, this game looks way better than I thought it would. It was just, they didn't show the right part of the game. They didn't understand how to present the amazing graphic style that they had devised.
Right. Well, you also got to admire the balls, though, to follow through, because there's a lot of people these days, you get character design changes, they get shown, they get negative reactions, and then they walk them back. Where, you know, Nintendo totally followed through, and I think most people do appreciate how great it is now. So it was the right call.
Right. But I mean, even further, though, I mean, the game was released unfinished. They had to cut an entire dungeon from the game because they couldn't get it out on time. And so that being able to manage expectations, I mean, that's all kind of encapsulates everything that was, you know, in my mind, that was right and wrong about Nintendo all in that same generation.
Finished is in the eye of the beholder, and that goes for this segment as well, guys. We've got to wrap it up. We could probably keep going for 2 more hours, and I wish we could.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about Ribbit King, man. You guys all forget about fucking Ribbit King, and that game is
awesome.
Save
it for next year, Billy.
Seriously.
We have to move on to the Famicast. We've got the 8-4 guys and the Famicast guys waiting in the wings, and I'm really excited to hear what they have to say. But first, we have to thank all of our guests here, Jeff, Billy, and – Rick, thank you so much, and Greg for hosting and putting the notes together. Could not be more pleased with how this went, and I hope we can do it again sometime.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Well, with that, we are dropping off the call, and the next thing you hear will be from Japan.
And that wraps up part two of the telethon. Come back next time to see how it all got weird with an up-close-and-personal live edition of the Famicast, the awkwardly brilliant GameCube Jeopardy, and finally, saying goodbye to the good old hour of shenanigans.